Morning, everyone. Declare the meeting open at 9:36. We have a full quorum here. There are no leaves of absence. Councillors, I just remind you of your responsibilities under the Local Government Act 2009 in relation to a councillor's material personal interest or conflict of interest about a matter to be discussed at a meeting. And obviously, when it comes to setting town plans and budgets, there are some exemptions in that space. I'm going to move on into straight into the 4.1.1, and what I might do in the first instance is ask officers to do a presentation so that we can inform people in the public gallery and that of the changes that have occurred, and then we'll move into formal proceedings. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Mayor. So obviously, councillors were here today to consider the draft Redland City Plan and going into the next stage of the process under the statutory guideline for making and amending a local planning instrument, namely the draft city plan. So the presentation, I'll go through a bit of a background to the formulation of the draft city plan. We'll look at the key issues raised in submissions, the proposed changes in response to submissions, and the statutory process for proceeding with that draft city plan. So where do we go from here? Why did Council decide to change? The Sustainable Planning Act, which governs planning within Queensland, requires the Council consider and review its planning scheme at least every 10 years. So the 2006 planning scheme was obviously due for review. In 2013, Council decided to prepare a new planning scheme, which became the draft city plan. As well as that, a lot has changed in the last 10 years. So the Queensland planning provisions are now in play. They set standard provisions for the structure of a planning scheme and for the elements of a planning scheme. So that's now standardised across Queensland. So the draft city plan picks up those Queensland planning provision structure. As well as that, there's now a single state planning policy to be appropriately reflected in our planning scheme that was not in play in 2006. We've seen changing levels of population growth, the demographic profile within the city, household sizes, etc. And we're looking at a new planning horizon of the year 2041, which aligns with the draft regional plan. There's also opportunities that preparing a new planning scheme presents. There's opportunities to improve the workability of the planning scheme, to relieve what we know as some internal conflicts within the current planning scheme and some operational issues within that scheme. We can start afresh and deal with those issues. It provides a strategic focus for the planning scheme. So within the Queensland planning provision structure, strategic frameworks become the preeminent part of the city plan. Of a planning scheme, so it sets what is the future focus of the scheme and the scheme area. There's the ability to strengthen some of the design provisions within the planning scheme and get better streetscape outcomes within our developments. To consider the risk profile of particular developments and draft a scheme that reflects that risk profile, to make it easy to do business in the city, to make it easy to realise development that's in accordance with the intent of a zone, and to present a planning scheme that's clearer and more easily understood by the community, the industry, and people that work every day with the scheme. So the process that we've gone through, or the council's gone through to prepare the planning scheme is set by a statutory guideline, a state government guideline, which is the Making and Amending Planning Instrument Guideline, or MALPI. As part of that, we're currently in stage three of that process. So the previous stages involved background studies that then informed the planning scheme. They covered a number of years. At that stage in 2013, Council then, as I said, resolved to make a new planning scheme. As part of that, Council confirmed the state interests from the state government, which we are then required to reflect within the planning scheme. The planning scheme was then prepared. It was then taken to council to move it to the next stage, which was to tender it for a state interest review to the planning minister. Between November 2014 and August 2015, the Minister and the State Department considered the planning scheme and came back to us in August 2015, allowing us to go to public consultation. Council publicly notified the planning scheme between the 13th of September and the 27th of November 2015 for a period nearly twice the statutory amount of time under the guideline. And we're currently in the next phase, which is consideration of the submissions. So we've gone through obviously a lengthy process in reviewing those submissions with councillors through workshops. And we're at the stage where a decision is sought as to what, where to next. Do we proceed with the city plan? After that decision's made, the next processes are to write to each properly made submitter, informing them how we address their submission, which is outlined within the report. And sending the proposed planning scheme and the information about how we address the submissions to the Minister. The consultation process itself, as I said, it went for an extended 11-week period between September and November 2015. It involved a number of different mediums. So there was ads in the paper advising of the proposed planning scheme and the elements of the scheme. Fact sheets about what's changed, what is the purpose and intent of the draft city plan. There was information on our website, etc. There were open house sessions that were run for the community to come in and talk with the planner, talk with councillors, talk with council officers about the draft. And then, as well as that, there was letters to all landowners and occupants within the city, as well as business owners within the city. As part of the consultation process, at the end of that process, council had received 5,347 properly made submissions. The matters raised in those submissions have been grouped in the report in the five different themes that exist under both the state planning policy and the strategic framework. The submissions grounds, every ground within the submission were considered by council and are presented as a summary within the report and the analysis of those grounds. Through the extensive series of workshops with council, there are a number of changes that came about as a result of those submissions. So those changes are listed within the report and represent the directions given by council through the workshop program. Yes. Importantly, the statutory guideline for making and amending a planning instrument identifies that council can only make three types of changes to its planning scheme, to the draft city plan at this stage in the process. One change is to address issues raised in a properly made submission, which is the majority of the changes that are proposed in the report. Secondly, to amend a drafting error, so administrative errors that may exist within the scheme, or to address new or changed planning circumstances or information, such as the change to the population forecasts from Queensland Treasury and Trade, which have been reflected as a proposed change to the draft city plan. As well as that, any changes that are proposed must continue to appropriately integrate any state interests. So those are those state interests that the state had nominated at the start of the drafting process. And finally, the changes must not result in the proposed planning scheme being significantly different to the advertised version. Otherwise, we need to repeat the public notification version to give people an opportunity to review, consult and submit on those changes that are significantly different. So some of the key changes, obviously the full report has the extensive list of changes, but just to pick up on some of the key changes. So in response to submissions, the proposed city plan seeks to provide some greater certainty of development outcomes within residential areas. So the minimum lot sizes for low density, low medium residential density and medium density residential development have been moved and strengthened by placing within the overall outcomes of those codes. So in the previous draft, they were as acceptable outcomes, which is one way to achieve the performance outcomes. They've been moved up and strengthened by putting within the overall outcomes. The character residential zone on the southern Moreton Bay Islands has been slightly reshaped. It becomes a more residential focused zone than the original draft. The minimum lot size and frontage width for the low medium residential density zone, low medium density residential zone, has been increased in response to submissions from 250 square metres to 400 square metres and from a 7.5 metre frontage width to a 10 metre frontage width. As well as that, there were changes to provide some greater protection and consideration of environmental values within the city. So the proposed city plan now seeks to regulate all native vegetation clearing within waterways where it coincides with the environmental significance overlay, to regulate all native vegetation clearing within the emerging community zone, which is the area, predominantly the area between Bunker Road and Double Jump Road, to seek to limit preemptive clearing. As well as that, the environmental significance overlay, which represents environmental values within the city, the methodology is proposed to be amended in response to submissions. So that map will show more areas of environmental significance based on lot sizes over 1,000 square metres in the urban area, where the previous methodology only mapped it on lots over 2,000 square metres. As well as that, council sought an independent expert to review the storm tide mapping contained within the draft city plan. And the result of that is updated storm tide mapping based on that independent review, which provides more refined data. The 15 council-owned properties, which were put out in the draft, proposed to be zoned for an urban purpose in response to a significant number of submissions. That decision has been returned back to those lots being within the open space conservation or environmental management zones, so the same zoning as they currently are in the current planning scheme. And as well as that, the existing low density areas at Alexandra Hills, Wellington Point and Birkdale, which were proposed in the original draft to move to a zone where the minimum lot size would be 400 square metres, has been returned back to a zone with a minimum lot size of 2,000 square metres, so which is what they currently are in the current planning scheme. The options under the statutory guideline for making and amending a local planning instrument, there's four options available to council. One is to proceed with the proposed planning scheme with the changes listed within the report, which are contained within Attachment 8 of the report. The second option is to proceed with the proposed planning scheme with different or amended changes to those listed in Attachment 8. The third is to proceed with the planning scheme with no changes, as per the advertised version, or fourthly, to not proceed with the planning scheme. So the recommendation to Council is to proceed with the proposed planning scheme with the changes listed in Attachment 8, to confirm that it reasonably believes that those changes are not significantly different to the advertised version of the draft city plan, and to submit that proposed planning scheme to the Minister seeking approval to adopt.
Councillors, that's your presentation. There'll be opportunities in the formal session to ask any further questions if required. But as you know, we have, over the last year at least, 100 hours of debate and 26 workshops. We've agreed to disagree on some issues, and I thank all the councillors for their input. I'm going to seek, just so that the gallery understands the process this morning, we're going to take the motion and put it on the floor. Every councillor will have their 5 minutes to be able to talk about the elements of the plan that they either approve of or are not comfortable with, because we understand just in any process that none of us will be 100% satisfied with every single outcome, but in the order to move forward and improve the issues that have been raised constantly, we need to have a city plan that works for the whole city. So we'll go around the room, give everyone their 5 minutes, and then basically we'll see what comes from the floor from that. Councillor Bishop, I believe you want to move your motion now, is that correct?
Madam Mayor, is with your discretion, I would like to propose that I put forward an alternative motion. As to when you want that to be heard, I'll leave that to your choice.
So there was informal agreement around the room in regards to how we would move forward with the city plan, and the majority of councillors agreed on the 80-20 rule, but clearly that's not always unanimous. So with that, Councillor Bishop, I'm happy for you to move your alternative motion as was discussed.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor, through you. And I think, Joyce, do you have a copy of that proposed alternative motion, which I'll read for clarification, that at this special meeting I intend to move as follows, that Council acknowledge the matters raised in the draft city drafting process, in the city plan drafting process to date, yet do not move to endorse this draft city plan. That Council retain relevant information and consider inclusion of certain aspects in a major amendment package to the 2006 Redlands Planning Scheme. That Council undertake to update and integrate a comprehensive transport strategy as well as a heritage strategy to guide and shape our future development patterns. That Council commence a phase of community consultation to determine the issues and values of importance to local residents. And that Council resolve to strengthen and prioritise the existing corridors and linkages within our rural areas, and that we consider local area planning as a way to manage the unique characteristics within our region. I'd like to move that.
Moved, Councillor Bishop. Seconded. Any seconder? Seconded, Councillor Hewlett. Councillor, are you wishing... I am trying to give everyone equal time on the floor today, and obviously you've raised the issues which you... other councils would probably raise as we go around the room, so you're happy to forfeit that for your discussion now? Yep.
If I may, I'd like to speak to this motion, and yep. And I don't intend to double up.
Okay, all right.
But I would like to reserve the right to be able to speak again.
Of course, if there's any new information, that would be great. Okay.
Thank you. So, thank you, councillors. This is really the first opportunity to... move into a public discussion about matters that I do believe are of incredible importance to not only our community but to the civic authority that we are as the planners for the future, and also for the signals that sends to the development community. The concerns that I have that are addressed in this alternative motion is that there are five, really. The first is consultation, the second is transport, the third is heritage and character, the fourth is environment and the important corridors, and the sixth is about design. I'll start with consultation. Before I start with consultation, I'd actually like to start with acknowledging that our officers have been absolutely exemplary and without fault, in my view. Every stage, they've been deliberative, they've been consultative, they've been thorough, robust, and I do not for a second question my confidence in those officers going forward. Having said that, what I'm about to speak about is about confidence, and I believe that I don't have the confidence. In terms of consultation, we did not go out at the statement of proposals phase, which was the initial opportunity for us to consult with our community and say, where do you want us to go? We did not consult at the period before we commenced our draft. The time that we did consult was when we went to statutory consultation phase for an extended period. It was supposed to be 6 weeks. We did it for 11. And what we heard back was that the community were not happy with the development and the way that we were moving. So I would like to, therefore, refer to what I've asked for is a consultation with our community to seek their values, because as it states in this report, one of the things that the state government suggests that we do is that it remains the discretion of the local government authority to plan their respective local areas. While we're expected to take on a certain amount of regional growth, we need to recognise the constraints, the limitations and values of the respective areas. That's this area, and that's consulting with our community. I'll speak to the second point now with regards to transport. We did not start this plan with a revised, updated transport strategy. The transport strategy we had was done in 2003 and is not relevant and would tell us clearly, well, is not entirely relevant to the situation that we know we are facing of constraint and would have been very constructive for us. The state government, we now know, has suggested that we are not likely to see any infrastructure in terms of transport planning for corridors in the years going out to their South East Queensland regional plan. A transport strategy would have told us that we need to think about our city and the footprint and the way we design and develop this city. And there are other aspects to transport that I'll come back to in a moment. In terms of heritage,
standing orders apply.
In terms of heritage, we've chosen to go down a path where we have separated heritage off as a separate parallel aspect of this plan. And I'll refer again to the fact that Redland City has the state responsibility to accommodate for our constraints, limitations and values of the respected area. Our Redlands 2030 community plan suggests that heritage is significant. We have not progressed a heritage plan. We need to do that, and I believe, and it comes further, it says later in the report on page 5, further, Redland City can largely deliver one of the things that the state has suggested is that we are only to grow by 1% per annum out to 2041. So acknowledging the significant environmental, rural and scenic attributes of the Redlands, the city has one of the smallest areas of growth across the city. The heritage and character opportunity would have allowed us to be very clear about how we want to observe and look after those important local heritage issues and how we want to design our villages, our city of villages. That's one consistent theme that I've heard from councillors, is that we all want to preserve that. In terms of environmental corridors, I've got some concerns that we have not done absolutely everything we can to ensure the strength of the corridors. I know the new overlay, significance overlay, goes some way towards doing that, but I think that there are other things that we need to do, and community would, I'm sure, encourage us to do in terms of managing those corridors and ensuring that our flora and fauna have habitat and important corridors in future. And I'll come back now to the process of design. From the moment that we began this, and I suggested before, officers have been exemplary. They brought us information. It has been in small parts, and we've dealt with the whole city and the many aspects, and I believe that there are great improvements in what is being proposed today. But in terms of the design, we have not, as councillors, stepped back to look at the really significant challenges that we face. We have not had a significant discussion about, do we want to increase significantly densities around our transport corridors? And you'd base that on a transport plan. And if we're going to do that, to what degree would we need to radically upscale the number of residents, the population density in this city, to compete with the South East Queensland regional priorities, which are saying, Redlands, you are not on our map. You are not actually likely to get some funding. If we were to look at how we would increase the density, we're probably looking at something like two or three times the $150,000 population.
Just a reminder that your 5 minutes is up.
Thank you. In terms of design, I believe that we as councillors have not stepped back and looked at the whole design process. We have not consulted robustly with the community at that initial phase when we should have scoped and planned for the future. And we didn't do it before the draft process. I really believe that the good work that has been done can be carried forward. I believe that by going back to, I understand under MALPI that if we do any consultation at this stage, it would effectively take us back to an early stage. And I think that it's worth us doing that to have the confidence among the development community, among the residents, and across all the levels of government that we are designing this city in a way that is commensurate with what the community expects and what we can do. And I believe that I would urge you to support that. I know that would come at a cost, and I understand that some of you want to allow the process to continue so we would avoid financial impost, but I do believe that we would gain incredible confidence and a sense of agreement about the pathway going forward if we were to include these important strategies and also the views of the community as we design for a city plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. I note, Speaker against, I note that you acknowledge the great improvements, and I'm sure the officers take that on board as an achievement on their behalf as well. Councillor Elliott, Speaker against.
Thanks, Mayor. It sounds really good. It sounds really good. However, the practicalities of we're at the threshold here where we're going to make, this is not significant changes. In 2006, the planning scheme was it was set, the areas were set there. We've done some minor intensification in the medium density areas. I promote that. I actually was the one in the room that voted against having a single house in a medium density block because we were wasting it at Alexandra Hills. They're the ones you build your three-storey units on. We haven't done any more. We've tidied this map up. This is not wholesale. There is not extra 1,000 acres of residential development. We've looked at changing our coverage in medium density areas, of setbacks, which I'll talk about, and I hope all councillors are going to talk about it as we go along. But certainly, I'll give you an example of consultation. I actually raised it with the Mayor this morning. On Saturday afternoon, I had a chappie from Hanover Drive. Now, I'm sure the group manager remembers the consultation at Alexandra Hill Shopping Centre about Hanover Drive and changing the lot sizes there. That's an active community. That's an active community. Anyway, as I'll say later on, it's 165 people against, responses against, and 2-4. Which way do you reckon we're going to go? This chappie rings me on Saturday at 1 o'clock. I'm sitting at the back. I've just picked this up from the councillor up. I hadn't read it, hadn't even opened. And he said, I've read on your online thing that this is going through and it's not changed to low density. I said, yeah, that's right. He said, why wasn't I told? I said, well, we're telling you now. Where have you been? The public consultation. He said, I didn't make a submission. I thought it was go. I said, it was public consultation. That's what it's about. My concern is, say council agrees today, we're going to have the consultation. All right, see in a month's time if we pull it all together, communication strategy. We go out for 30 days. We spend another 3 months and the officers will go through it. And it comes back again and it's the same result. What do we do then? Do we keep having public consultation until you get it right? This is it. In my area, I'll give you an example in Kinross Road. There is 2,000 lots probably there. They're doing 10 metre wide by 35.2s at the moment because the minimum lot size is 350. In this, we're saying 10 metres by 40, 400 square metres is the minimum lot size. There is no minimum lot size, in Kinross Road. So the longer you want to muck around, the longer you want to take, you cannot make these changes to protect your community. And I am not, for one, going to go back to public consultation. We've had a public consultation. It doesn't get much more vigorous than the Alex Hill Shopping Centre on that Saturday morning, I'll tell you. And these officers here, two of the officers, well, one's not here. I think he's left us because he couldn't stand it. But no, he's still downstairs. That's one thing. The transport strategy. All right, fine. I must say the transport study is a few years late. I can see no significant difference. The government has told us. There'll be no greater road corridors, four-laning, 15 years, I think I was told, a year and a bit ago. So keep harking back to the 2006 scheme. The approvals are there to develop. It's moved on. The government, the state government, provides the transport. We do bus stops and all those sort of things. This, it's on its way. You can't go back. If you want to go back, and I'm happy we're going to have a major amendment package in about 6 weeks' time ready to go on other things we couldn't talk about because they weren't allowed through the system, which you could do in the 2006 scheme. These things will come to fruition. I can't see any great change, and I'm a public transport advocate, trust me, as far as that goes. The heritage study is underway. Council is actively doing that at the moment, and I've suggested to Councillor Bishop on two occasions, if you've got anything else to put in, if we want a precinct, we've shown down the road here in Cleveland, the officers showed us, it didn't work. We had, you know, protection, so-called protection on houses going up to the Grandview Hotel. It didn't work for whatever reason over the years. So I think we've moved on. We're certainly active in purchasing stuff. I would like to see, and I'll be blunt, I'd like to see a heritage levy in this city. I'll be recommending that at budget time. Councils may accept that or not. I'm not trying to grandstand on that one. The environmental corridors, it's taken me a while, but the environmental significance overlays, I'm hanging my hat, that's going to work. We've seen where conservation, it looks bad. It looks bad, it's changed, it's all to rule, but there's still the checks and balances there. There's still discussion going on about things like that, but I certainly wouldn't put my hand up if I thought it was going to be worse than the thing we got. We try and improve these things. We've got far better mapping these days than we've ever had. Years ago, you'd have a block of conservation. Could all be she-oaks. Could be nothing. Could be rubbish, you know, but it suddenly is conservation. We're getting better mapping on the ground. You have to respect that. The design of our cities is... It's there at the moment. The scheme has the zones there. You've got to have medium density development, higher density development around your nodes. I'm not activated saying right across the city, but around your nodes, which are shopping centres, things like that. If you want a decent bus system in this city, you have to do that. And I could not see us going out to the community and saying, in Alexandra Hills, and I push for these 100 lots, in 2006 scheme to be enclosed right next to the shopping centre. If I came and told you I would like six stories there, would you be happy? No, we haven't done that. What we've done is look at the coverage of the areas, the setbacks on those blocks, and that's it. We haven't done it. There's nothing drastic here as far as that goes. Can I say, stopping the clock, you can't do. We're going to lose significant time. And can I say, this council had a change of government a couple of years ago. The whole thing stopped. I don't want to see that again. While we're moving ahead for better changes in the city, some I don't like, and I'll be outlining those shortly, some I don't like. But certainly you have to move on. There's going to be an election this year by the state. If that changes, you might have a whole new government that doesn't listen to councils and might do what they want to do and open up more areas. So you have to move, as they say, when the iron's hot. I support this, but there are, as I say, things in it I don't like, and I'll be telling you the things I don't like. They might be minor in some cases, but there's some things I don't like. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Speaker 4. On what, sorry? Sure. Yep. Obviously, these have been in process for a little while. I don't know if they can actually give us any sort of time frame. I know there's parts of the heritage and the transport study that... David, can you...
I understand Councillor Bishop's reasoning for putting this up. You know, he's got issues with the planning scheme. He'd like it to commence again. I was just going to explain why.
Standing orders. So you want a response from the office. You asked a question. So
yep,
do you want
I've
to
got one other part of the question, if I may. Under MELPI, exactly how would this occur? Time and financial implications. Where is the heritage scheme now? Where is the transport strategy now? And actually, would doing this hurry that up to get it into the planning scheme or not?
I'm not able to answer all of those, but Chris, okay, Chris, you talk to heritage, okay, Chris.
So I'll take the first part of that question. That is, what are the implications under the statutory guideline, under MALPI? So it would effectively be taking option 4 in the report, which is to not proceed with the planning scheme. So it would be saying that we won't proceed with the current draft, but Councillor Bishop is saying the work that's gone into it then is pulled in as an amendment to the current planning scheme. But it would effectively put this process to an end under the statutory guideline. In terms of the heritage studies and the transport...
So just I'm assuming that you're talking about what it's currently cost us. So it's about $3 million for this process from Way to Go. $3 million to ratepayers for this planning process. Is that what you're referring to?
No, I was referring to if we were to stop the process now, use the contents and just put in what we want into the 2006 planning scheme, I think is what the motion says. What is the time and financial implications?
I couldn't put a figure on it, but the implications would be we would have to do a significant review of the current planning scheme. The current planning scheme is not written in accordance with the Queensland planning provisions, so it's not in that structure that the state tells us to put a planning scheme in. So we'd have to consider what are the implications of the studies and how do we package that into our current planning scheme. It would take quite a bit of time to be able to do that. The heritage study and the transport study, I'll let Andrew and David talk to their status, but I think there's quite a bit of work still to be done on those. So to incorporate into the planning scheme, those studies need to have got to a point where it's determined how they inform the planning scheme.
Andrew and David, or David first, toss the coin.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, councillors are aware that we have a current operational project this financial year to deliver a heritage study to councillors. We report on that study through the operational plan, and you'll note that we said the project is on track. We've engaged a heritage consultant to actually look at potential heritage properties across the city and to give information to council for you to consider what options you see as potentially appropriate for addressing heritage across the city. We plan to have that project completed this financial year, and at that point council can consider whether there are any amendments that need to be made to the planning scheme to incorporate changes following council's review of that project. So it's close.
Transport, Andrew.
Through you, Madam Chair, it's very similar with the transport strategy, which presented a workshop with Council late last year. We've engaged consultants to prepare the new strategy, and that will be subject to the census data, which we believe will come out through April, May this year.
That's the answer to those questions. I think just to sum up, I don't think there's too much more discussion from what I saw with hands. Just it's really important to note that this has been a very long process, really. Arguably, we started this 5 years ago, certainly in earnest since this council has been elected. It does come at a significant cost. Consultation, public consultation, thorough public consultation, sending a letter to every single landowner in the city probably hasn't been done anywhere else in Queensland that I'm aware of. And those elements of consultation, not only from a time frame perspective, but also from the thoroughness of making sure people knew what was going on, is a costly... Excuse me, I would just ask for respect in the public gallery while there are speakers, thank you. So it has been costly. I remind councillors also that the first state interest review took 9 months. 9 months. I won't allude to when a state election will be, but let me tell you that if it falls in the middle of the first state interest review, you could be having this same debate in another 3 years' time. And I don't think there's anybody in this room from the development assessment processes that we've gone through in recent times that want to see a continuance of what Councillor Elliott referred to in regards to some of his community. We want to fix the problems that we can fix. We are constrained by state legislation, whether it be through the MALPI process or the Queensland planning provisions or the Queensland Development Code, and we have to acknowledge that. We can try to ignore it, but we are in fact misleading our community to say that we can. So I respect the fact that councillors don't want to support this for what their reasons are, but in fact by not supporting this, you're supporting business as usual, and that's what the community have been crying out about for the last number of years. So I'll hand back to Councillor Bishop to quickly sum up with no new information as required under standing orders, and then we'll put that to a vote.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. If I may ask one question of Officer David Jeans in relation to the heritage study. Just want to clarify, David, is that a heritage study or a heritage strategy in terms of what is being currently asked?
I suggest they're probably two separate things. The study is to, my understanding is to inform any potential amendments. Is that correct?
That's correct. So the study looks at heritage or potential heritage properties across the city and gives council options as to how you might deal with heritage, either through regulatory measures or non-regulatory measures. And if you choose to take regulatory measures, then of course there may be amendments that will be made to the planning scheme.
So just on that point, I think, and it certainly was raised by Councillor Elliott, that a heritage strategy has, or precincts in his view, have not previously worked. And I think it's all the more reason why we need to be very strategic and have to have a holistic heritage strategy to look at how and where in other places it has worked, because we know that heritage is a significant issue in this city and it does need to be addressed. And at this stage, it's a parallel process, and at this stage, it's only a study. That's a concern that I have. Another concern that I have, and with respect to Councillor Elliott's views, and he's certainly been a strong advocate for public transport, the non-inclusion of a transport strategy as an updated, robust strategy to guide us leaves us asking the question. The state has said we're only going to grow at 1%. It's the only region in the whole of southeast Queensland that's going to go in that direction. There's a question that we haven't asked of our community. Do we want to continue with growth and promoting infill to a level that could be along the lines of, you know, Parramatta via Logan? Or do we want to move in a direction that actually acknowledges the unique characteristics of our area, look at local area planning and how we have a more finely nuanced response to our city plan? Without going back to the community for the consultation that I think is outstanding and really needed, and we've got very smart people in our city who would guide us, and there are other processes that can be used now to get very good consultation information of relevance to councillors to give us all the confidence. There are many ways now that we can do that in a strategic way that would give us all more confidence. I believe that the price involved is not a significant impost, and that the guarantee that we could give to the community would give confidence that would allow us to move together in a direction that is more in line with what our community wants, what our development community ultimately would deliver to the market, and what we as a local council can say is important to the people and place of this region, to the state government, regardless of whether it's political pendulum to the left or the right. I think it's really important that we acknowledge that in this plan as it stands, the proposal is that developments that have been very big concerns in my division and certainly other parts of the city would not be impact assessable, and that things like the proposed development...
Councillor, you're introducing new information now in your sum up, so I'm going to ask you to...
Then I'll retract that, but it's why I believe that we really need to be clear about what the values are in the community. And I also note that we've allowed in this request for the information that's relevant to be carried forward, and that's very much out of respect for the work that the officers have done. So the question is to we councillors, do we want to look at how we can make this something that we can all feel more confident with, because it's a city plan, it's the biggest thing we will do in our term.
Thank you, councillor. I put the motion, councillors. Thank you. The motion is on the alternative motion is there for your and you've had the debate. Can I put the motion, please? Those in favour of the alternative motion? Those against? The motion is lost. So we return to our officer's recommendation, and I will make sure we'll get those against. Oh, you have? Okay, thank you. Those against were Councillor Golay, Hewlett, and... Oh, those four, pardon me. Golay, Hewlett and Bishop, thank you. So, councillors, I now ask that we have a mover for the officer's recommendation, and I believe there's an administrative amendment that comes with that. Councillor, are you happy to move that?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Yes, I am. Do you wish me to read this out again?
No, I just think you probably want to make sure the amendment is up.
That's
there
fine.
For that councillors, administrative
there'll be a dot
mission.
Point.
Can
we just be a bit quiet while we're talking, please? There'll be a dot point for councillors. This is just to We have become aware of the omission of one property in the list of changes, so that's all it is. And what it is 236 to 246 Queen Street, Cleveland Beach. I'll give this to you, Joyce. 236 to 246 Queen Street, Cleveland, be changed to medium density residential zone in accordance with the submission workshop directions in response to submission ID 3508.
Chris, just while Councillor Elliott is providing that information to Joyce, just quickly, maybe officers bringing this forward for Council to put forward as amendment, you might just want to explain that.
So this is just an administrative error. It's just a submission that that wasn't listed within Attachment 7 and should have been. So it's a matter that was workshopped with Council through the property-specific workshops. So a property within Cleveland, currently zoned Environmental Protection, sits surrounded by commercial industry and medium-density residential zoned land, and Council agreed in those workshops to zone it to medium-density residential consistent with its surrounding zoning. And to maintain the environmental significance overlay that sits on part of that land.
All right, Councillor. So we have a mover for that motion with the amendment. Can you just run your eyes over that, Councillor Elliott, to make sure it's correct? And officers? Okay, seconder for the motion, Councillor Mitchell. Okay, well, councillors, I think we had a brief discussion previously as to how we wanted to deal with some other small changes to this. So if I recall the discussion correctly, we were going to have an adjournment. Is that correct, or are we going to have a discussion first? Okay. Okay, all right, so Councillor, we're just going to have we're going to go around the room in the first instance. Sorry? I thought we are going to have an adjournment and we are going to have a discussion. I'm just making sure we've got it in the order that you were happy with earlier. So my understanding was we were going to have a discussion first. Okay, so with that, sorry, Councillor Boglari, I know you're waiting for the nod, but what we're going to do is have 5 minutes each to discuss the elements. No? My understanding was that we were going to have that discussion first and then have an adjournment, and then you have an opportunity to talk to any potential changes again if necessary. Okay.
Sorry. Okay, so today we're here to vote on sending the draft to the state government for the second state interest review, and the state might possibly make changes, but I doubt this at this stage because there's no significant changes to the original draft that has been sent in. The draft will then be sent back to council for adoption, and by forwarding to the state government, council is stating that we are satisfied with the contents. Running in parallel with the draft, there's an amendments package, and in this package are the changes proposed to be made that are not related to a resident submission or of any nature that would not be considered significant. I would like to thank officers for the years of research, collating, presenting and being patient with not only my ongoing questions but everybody else's in the room, and I do appreciate their time and knowledge. Firstly, I'd like to comment on changes that affect my division, Wellington Point and Ormiston. Council has reviewed the flood and storm tide overlay in response to submissions. This has ensured the mapping is fit for purpose and that the mapping has changed, which has then decreased the impact on a majority of those residents that previously were. This is a positive for my residents, and those maps will now be able to be seen on Council's website, I'm presuming, once this meeting is held. Various submissions have been received requesting zone changes, and unfortunately, as always, there are some people who will be happy and some that will not be satisfied with the recommendations that are going forward. One change from the draft, where there were numerous submissions lodged by my residents, were that the larger blocks in various parts of Wellington Point actually stay as they are. and this has been approved. And also in Yorkshire Place, Yorkston Place, Ormiston, it has also been changed back to what the Ormiston residents wanted. A concern of smaller lots that were being zoned by residents in the southern area of Station Street has been addressed, as the new zone that it got changed to has now been changed to a minimum lot size of 400, so they will not see that difference in residential dwellings in that area. Small lots and higher density is a very passionate concern of Redlanders for a number of years, and listening to submissions, there have been positive changes in these areas. Minimum lot size across the city in low density res is now 400, whereas previously it was 350. The lot size was also increased in the low medium density residential to 400. It was 250, and council has changed the setback from 3 metres to 6 metres, which will hopefully alleviate some of the car parking issues we are now having in front of small lots across the infill areas. Also, frontages was 7.5 metres. This is now being increased to 10 metres. The draft doesn't identify density, which is one criteria in assessing a development, but identifies performance outcomes of the other relevant design criteria. This remains a concern for many, including myself, especially when site coverages are increased. However, when one talks to residents and after talking to officers, it is more the design and impact on the existing neighbourhood than density. And officers are given their assurance with the changes in the draft, there will be improved community outcomes through improved impact design elements. These improved design elements include the street frontages, which has been increased, landscaping, car parking, and building design outcomes. Having no acceptable outcomes enforces what we have in the performance outcomes. An example of an improvement in this area is car parking, which is now calculated on a bedroom rather than a unit. So previously it was 1.25 parks per unit, now it is a ratio per bedroom, and you can have up to 2.3 car parks for a 3-bedroom unit. These changes are welcome, as Redlands has recently seen several inappropriate developments with shocking designs constructed. However, I am not totally confident on this, but I will continue to monitor as applications come in to see how these new design elements work, and will be the first to add more to an amendments package if the results are not actually what we want achieved. The process to control tree clearing has changed in the urban footprint. There is now no local law, but all tree clearing is regulated through the city plan. Clearing of native vegetation in the urban areas of 500 metres or more will trigger a development assessment. The matters of local environmental significance has already been talked about by the officers, and this has increased compared to the draft that went out now to make sure that blocks over 1,000 metres is recognised, not 2,000. Officers have given me an example of wholesale tree clearing that recently happened on an Ormiston block and assured me that this change will prevent this happening in future. I am cautious of this change as the urban area of Redlands has such a unique character due to the beautiful treed suburbs and urban wildlife. So this again is a change that I am accepting but will watch closely. All city plan decisions are based on the welfare of the whole of Redlands City, and other whole of city changes include the draft city plan does not expand the urban footprint as there is sufficient zoning of land existing from the 2006 plan with the extra approvals to provide sufficient land to meet predicted population growth to 2041. There is a small area of urban footprint that has been allowed down on whatever, quarter of Double Jump Road. So that, I shouldn't have said it hasn't expanded it at all, but it's only that very small area down there. Not expanding the urban footprint increases use of the existing infrastructure and services plus saves our rural environment. I agree with changes to zones on North Stradbroke Island to encourage better design for our tourism industry, and also changes to Simbi to character residential to encourage employment and economic growth opportunities on the islands. Due to the significance of the Commonwealth land at Birkdale to the Redlands, it has now been included in the strategic framework. However, I would like to see tourism, heritage, sporting and recreation and open space included in the uses listed and not just the focus on clean industry. This is actually one change I thought was going to happen. I thought it had, so that is one that I will want to make sure is included in the amendments package, which is to come. Council has to ensure all the environmental and cultural values of this area are totally protected and, I believe, not limit to the focus that is written in the book. Council was working on a heritage strategy, which unfortunately ceased and now is still needing to be completed, and this will be included in the future amendments package as well. This has been disappointing to both myself and the community, as we are all very proud of our heritage, and it is extremely concerning considering the significant losses that we have seen occur over the past decade. I am accepting that the transport strategy at this moment has not been finalised, but we've just heard this morning that it is coming and it will soon to be finalised. Our Redland City is divided into two areas, the urban area within the footprint and the rural area. In our rural area, there has been significant changes in the draft city plan. Across the city, the only conservation land now is land under the state government or Redland City Council ownership, except if you're on the southern Moreton Bay Islands. Previously, there has been land included in conservation that was privately owned, which has now been zoned rural. Due to this, there are more uses which are now code accessible. A large portion of the southern area of the city is covered by the environmental significant overlay. However, under this overlay, each property can clear 2,500 metres square from the commencement of this plan. These areas are not covered with the those areas not covered with the overlay have no tree protection. I have concerns with this regulation of tree clearing, as it will be extremely difficult to accurately monitor. Previously, if tree clearing wasn't associated with a development approval, Local Law 6 would regulate the clearing with the 10 metre and 3 metre rules. Now clearing can occur to the amount of 2,500 with no regulation before it triggers the overlay. And this is also in areas that were previously zoned conservation. The clearing allowed of 2,500 metres square is also in the water catchment area, which is an extremely sensitive area, plus it's now in the draft South East Queensland Regional Plan as recognised biodiversity corridor. I would have liked to have seen the area allowed to be cleared under this overlay reduced to 500 metres on lots where an existing dwelling already is, due to the extremely valuable environmental values. I have been told this is to allow the owners to have at least an area where they can make some sort of return from their land, as triggering the overlay costs so much more for development applications, etc. I would like to suggest that this area we revise to assist these landowners and we continue to protect some tracts, some large tracts of Redlands bushland. These bushland areas are essential to the character and uniqueness of Redlands, public nature refuges, vital for the variety of flora and fauna and for our local economy, especially with tourism. Plus, it helps to maintain our water quality that flows down through our city to reach our precious Moreton Bay. There are large areas of remnant vegetation across the upper parts of this catchment area, and sadly, there is little remnant vegetation in the lower parts. Development and activities can change the shape of the landscape and can modify water flow. We must remember the water quality is influenced by these points. There have been two changes to the draft which are positive, and they've been brought around by councillors, but also because of the number of submissions we had to support them. And these two positive ones for the environment is council has agreed to amend the draft to a zero clearing threshold in the waterway corridors, and there is now a zero clearing threshold in the emerging community zone to prevent preemptive development clearing. Making and amending the local planning instrument MLPI is the process that council followed in making this plan. I am disappointed in the community consultation or engagement or informing, whatever term one wants to give. I'm also disappointed that the major amendments package with the heritage and transport is not ready as yet, but will be coming over the next few months. Energies have to be put into making a constructive difference, regardless of how we vote today. It has to go into making a constructive difference into this amendments package which is coming. Community consultation can, I hope, commence now at least, and concerns that the community bring up at this point of time, we can ensure, I hope again, get into the amendments package. However, at this stage, my stand on the environmental my stand on the tree clearing in the rural part of our city is my sticking point for this plan and my vote today.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
I'll try not to, I'll add a little and not try and double up too much because we do share a lot of common ground amongst a group of very caring and passionate councillors. I acknowledge the different opinions and the extent of opinion around the consultation process. I thank the community for its input and the ongoing interest in the process, and again acknowledge the work of my councillor colleagues, the officers, external experts and the state. It's been a very extensive process. Importantly, the submissions surrounding the plan have informed and influenced what's before us today, and you'll hear that from a lot of the councillors. I think a failure to adopt the draft city plan, the risks of not adopting it far outweigh the risks of adopting something that is by nature imperfect. To expect perfection is just not realistic. These are movable feasts. I acknowledge there will be ongoing work needed in the future. The city plan is intended to be a living document. Like all living things, will need work on its fitness for purpose over the years, and we can all help with that. So to this end, in accordance with the state government's MALPI process, your councillors and Redland City Council already have an amendments package underway. So we're on the front foot, but only if we pass the draft scheme today. On the plan in front of us, around the strategic framework, I'll just comment on some of the things in livable communities and housing's theme. I'm also pleased that the draft city plan doesn't propose an expansion of the urban footprint, apart from a very minor package that the Councillor Boggolari alluded to. So rather, it's the clever and carefully planned use of the existing land and infrastructure associated with that land, and that's projected to meet our population growth. Reduction of the urban sprawl through sensible land use has great social and environmental benefits. This is equally true on the mainland as well as North Stradbroke Island. It will help us to protect our strategic wildlife corridors, our waterways and our catchments, dear to all of us, and also help us to identify and make available new sport and recreational land opportunities. To do this, an acceptance by the community of a variety of dwelling choices will need to be required. Adaptable and more achievable housing choices are required for the aged, downsizers, people with disabilities, first home buyers, and perhaps our very mobile national and international workers. These are our brothers, our fathers, our colleagues, young entrepreneurs. So I have some concerns around a shortage of small freehold detached dwellings. Council's independent housing needs assessment from 2011 clearly identified this gap in our availability around that more flexible choices. Doesn't have to be a lot, but we need to identify that gap. The overlays. I think this is a really positive aspect of the city plan. Overlays identify areas within the planning scheme that reflect state and local level interest. So I'm really pleased that overlays have now been strengthened in the draft city plan and hold more weight against the relevant assessment criteria. Things like the bushfire hazards, coastal protection, environmental significance, flood and storm tide hazard, waterway corridors and wetlands. So the overlays should now be able to do the heavy lifting of regulation and protection, as is their intent. So protection of high value vegetation, of property and human life, and infrastructure has a new level of strategic muscle in the draft city plan. Further to this, the accuracy of a lot of our mapping and other contributing information is getting better and better, so we can really have some confidence and faith that these things will now mean something and help us a lot. A few specific examples at, say, Point Lookout, where the bushfire overlay is very important in this highly vegetated area. This is going to help provide significant guidelines in the regulation of building in both the low and high risk areas and give a lot of comfort. Round Amity Point, where the Coastal Protection Overlay Code will inform building and development. It's an area we've got some very, very significant erosion risks. An example of a building code in this area is that it's a dwelling will be not anticipated to remain in place for more than 10 years or is it must be capable of being disassembled and removed. Very sensible if you're in an area that is at high risk of being eroded. Around Raby Bay, Councillor Boggolari alluded to it, The flood and storm tide overlay code, the mapping around this has been significantly refined. The LIDAR images have gone down from a resolution of 5 metres to 1 metre. This has really informed a lot more accuracy in the mapping, as well as the ground-based surveying that has further informed that. So I think that's going to be a lot more accurate for home buyers and for insurers and give some comfort to the industry. It also will also be demonstrating present-day risk as well as future risk, which has been one of the concerns. So we'll have some real-time as well as what's anticipated by state regulations. Sticking with Raby Bay for a while, the revetment walls are and the setbacks are a very topical issue there. The current city plan has only been fair in providing the expected community outcome. The draft city plan takes a different approach and recognises that the building work, the actual structures, are regulated under the building assessment provisions outlined in the Building Code of Australia. However, Section 33, the much-loved Section 33 of the Building Act, does allow a planning scheme to include provisions for setbacks in relation to amenity. Therefore, the draft city plan does include a setback of 9 metres to the rear boundary, but this will only be assessed against the performance outcome on amenity and not the structural impacts on the wall. This remains the jurisdiction of the building code. We'll edit that bit. Been said before. Low-density residential codes. Around Point Lookout again, there's a specific precinct here, LDR 3. This area has been acknowledged for some significant architectural elements that we would love to protect. So the planners have worked very hard, and as the councillors have, to enshrine the intent of previous local area plans into the draft city plan. They've now been rolled in. By embedding the detail in one document, there's reduced risk of human error, increased clarity, increased simplicity, less duplication. So we believe the intent has been rolled in and we've increased the safety within the documents. Specific examples, site cover in that area is limited to 30%. Lightweight finishes such as timber and fibre cement must be used. Verandas and decks must be incorporated. And we've instigated a 2-metre-wide landscaping strip that addresses the street to give the Point Lookout feel to that specific area. Moving to Cleveland, and Cleveland is a principal centre zone and has been for a long time. Specifically around submissions, they identified a pedestrian link between Shore Street West and Middle Street, and this has now been included, so that's a good thing. Apart from that, the city plan rolls over the long-held principles of intended development in our city's civic heart and along the transport corridor. And we alluded to it before, importantly, the draft city plan strengthens the design and the functionality elements, specifically around medium density, but other housing choices as well, by separating these design elements from other acceptable outcomes. So design must now be addressed in applications. So things like the aesthetics of the building, the parking requirements were mentioned, the interaction at the public-facing street front, all those things are now elevated in approval negotiations and planning. So this will go quite some way, we hope, in improving community outcomes and meeting those expectations that, quite frankly, the existing city plan has not met very well. Finally, around our healthcare precinct, around Weepin Street, the establishment of the specialised centre zone around this area will remove some of the barriers to an expansion of some of the valuable healthcare facilities for the city, perhaps research and education centres and associated activities. Infrastructure and access requirements in this precinct can now be master planned. High-value services for the community, better infrastructure and a variety of jobs, many highly paid, will likely follow. So in conclusion, I've presented just some of the improvements available in the proposed city plan. I'll likely be supporting the adoption because I believe the risk of non-adoption, the opportunity lost from the improvements embedded are just not worth taking that risk. Thank you.
Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. My colleague, Councillor Bishop, moved a motion and that never got up, so moving forward, where to from here? First of all, I'd just like to point out that the draft is only a draft and that the state government may not accept some of the recommendations of changes that we've actually put forward. However, there was a huge community backlash previous to me being elected, and I've only been in for about 8 months, that the 2006 plan was unsatisfactory and there needed to be major changes. I sort of look at the processes in play as a new council, and I look at... we're also working in conjunction with other reviews like the Queensland Development Code, which will no doubt outlay setbacks, etc., and how our city plan ties in into that. So that's still under review as well. And you also got the South East Queensland Regional Plan, which is still, you know, a work in progress as well. So I raised a query in relation to that. How come we're putting the plan forward when those other documents are not complete? And I suppose it comes back to the fact that this is just a draft. Okay, this is not the Bible now. This is still a draft. It's still a work in progress. And also recognise the fact that some of the points that have been raised in relation to heritage and transport, etc., these are all things that are going to be working in conjunction with this process that we're going through now. And the major amendment package will address any sort of issues that arise with that and with this as well. I suppose when I put my hand up to run, one of the key aspects during the election was to bring to a halt small lot development. And I feel that working with the officers, who have been incredibly diligent, the mayor's always had her door open to me to speak to her. I've drawn on the experience of the other senior councillors. I've been able to draw on the experience from the executive officer, from the mayor's office, the CEO, because as a rookie, I'm not an expert in planning, and I have to go out to the experts who are here, and also have to walk the fine line of talking to the community and getting their input as well. But what seems to be missing in all this is that we have legislative requirements that have to be met. And there's also things that need to be done through legal aspects and ethical aspects, not so much emotional aspects. So the one key thing that working with my colleagues were able to stop was small lots. We basically put in the 10 metre frontage with 400 square metre lots. That is a better desired outcome. I lobbied for 500 square metre lots. It was the difference between a 350 square metre lots or a 500. We came up with 400. I think that was a good outcome. I think it's a positive outcome. I think overall there's parcels of land within Thornlands that were destined to become 400 square metre lots, and working with my colleagues as a team, we basically got that changed in this draft to 2,000 square metre lots. I think that's a fantastic outcome. Whether the state government agrees with us or not, that's a totally separate issue. Okay, because remember, this is a draft that has to go back to the minister's office. Okay, so this hasn't been Wheel of Fortune where we've sat here and spun it for the best of, you know, individuals and so help me God. We've put a lot of hours, a lot of money, a lot of expertise into coming up with these. Yes, I have a concern in relation to conservation and environmental management land being converted into rural, non-urban. From a layperson's perspective, my fear is that it's very easy then to lodge an MCU to make it smaller or design it in some other way. Now, I could be incorrect, but I'm still learning.
I'm pretty sure that we need to reiterate that anything in the rural area, subdivision is not allowed.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm still learning, for the record.
It's not allowed. Very clear on that. So I just wanted to make sure.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And as I said, I'm still learning, so, you know, I retract that comment. But it's a learning process. I'm not a planning expert. I'm a member of our society who's put my hand up to come in here and advocate to do the best job I can for the community. And under legislation, I'm required to get the best possible outcome for the entire city. There is a sticking point for me as well, which is the clearing on a already established piece of property I would rather look at a previous officer's recommendation to make it 500 square metres rather than 2.5. I'm sure we'll have more conversation around that. My primary goal now as a councillor in Division 3 is to look at the livability and the sustainability. And that means looking at areas that can be brought into open space or community use to develop parks, and that's happening as we speak. And that's through the diligence and the recognition of a previous council who took the money and went out and purchased land to bring back into today what we see now, for me to basically look at how we can get the best possible parks design. I've got to look at things like cycleways, walkability, how we can actually make Thornlands a livable place in relation to sustainability and livability. Because I've spoken to some of the residents down in the Waterline Estate, for example, and they are absolutely over the moon with the choice of property that they are living in today. And you can say, well, it's a small lot, or et cetera, et cetera. The fact is, people will purchase it if the market's there and it's offering it, and they're going to purchase that product and they're happy with that purchase. Who am I to stand in their way? I've got to look at the entire process and the entire city. And I believe that there's items in this draft that I'm not happy with that I'm prepared to discuss before I accept it in its entirety, and I'm sure we'll do that later. But for the most, there's been some very positive outcomes. And that's all I've really got to say, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Golay. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yeah, I agree. We discussed this for a number of workshops. And I'm not going to. I completely agree with Councillor Wendy Baglari's summation there. I think that was very accurate on my concerns for the city. In my own division, I'm very happy that the open space zone in Coochie Mudlow Island is going to conservation to complete the Emerald Fringe around that island, which is extremely important to the locals. I'm also requesting through the amendment package that the medium density height be reduced over there from 13.5 to 8.5 so that the canopy of the trees is not compromised in that Emerald Fringe. I'm very happy that the conservation block down near Point Helen Road will remain in conservation. I'm very happy that the Scouts Epropar area will remain in conservation. I'm also happy that none of the parks in my division are being rezoned for sale as across the city. I'm very happy that the LMDR zone, which is the 250s, have been increased to 10 metre frontages and 400 square metres. That leads me to what I'm not happy with. What I'm not happy with is the double jump Clay Gully and Brendan Way zone coming into the emerging community zone. It's already got applications over it. Let the applications deal with it. In my area and in Paul's area, Councillor Golly's area, sorry, development is the key issue. We don't need the development now. It's 15 to 20 years out before that development's going to be needed. If the developers want to build on that, let the application deal with it, but I think we should leave it on the rural non-urban zone. The other area that concerns me is, as Wendy, Councillor Baglari pointed out, is the increase in rural zoning across the whole of Division 6, round through Mount Cotton, Sheldon, and down to southern Redland Bay. In the draft sheet notice that went out to the community, it said non-urban areas in Division 6 in private ownership are predominantly zoned rural and the environment with the environmental significance and other overlays. Now, to me, that's not enough information. In every other zone that I've viewed, it virtually tells you block by block what zones are changing. There should have been a percentage described to the community on what zones were changing from conservation to rural. Now, some of that land, particularly along West Mount Cotton Road, Avalon Road, out past Serpentine Creek, is native bushland. Now, I don't particularly care about the clearing in the current rural zones because most of that's cleared. But in those areas, we're now going to allow animal keeping, agriculture, wineries. Not in conservation zones, we don't.
Councillor.
So these areas that have been changed from conservation to rural are now going to allow an intensification of use, which will affect our wildlife and our koala coast and our biodiversity region. So it's not just a small change, it's a massive change across that division, and it really concerns me. And this isn't about trying to go forward on one front. I'm really concerned about the changes in that zone. If you click on a ready map and then click on the city plan, all of that dark green conservation is gone to rural non-urban.
I'll get an office. I'll let the office respond later.
I'm all for rural enterprises. The way to deal with that, in my opinion, is to make it easier in the conservations to do micro-enterprises and do it on a case-by-case. Doing a wholesale change across that southern part of the city is not the right way to go, in my opinion. That's all I have to say. I'm not going to reiterate again what the other councillors have said. I agree with a lot of what they've said, but they're the issues that concern me. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hewlett. I'll just get, just quickly if I could, just a response to the issue that was raised in regards to conservation, then I'll move on to Councillor Edwards.
Through the Chair. So the city plan zones most of the privately owned properties within the non-urban area within the rural zone. The way it deals with environmental values is through the overlay and through the impact of vegetation clearing. So as opposed to regulating the use, which might be a dwelling house, cropping, etc., it deals with the vegetation clearing that that occurs as a result of that. And that's where the threshold is set for vegetation clearing within the rural zone of the 2,500 square metre clearing exempt threshold. So when it goes above that, it requires an application for the vegetation clearing, but it regulates the impact of clearing as opposed to the impact of the use.
Thank you. Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. I'll be reasonably brief because I think councils are covering much of the document pretty well. I'm sure in 2006 the council at the time that brought out the town plan then didn't foresee some of the problems that have arisen since. And I've got no doubt that it was done in good faith, and they thought that we wouldn't be in a situation down in the years where there's been a lot of angst about some of the development that's happened. And that really comes out, in my belief, is because we've got this performance-based plan which has got a lot of grey area in it. And so as we go through this next process now, we're hoping for the best, but still there could be some grey areas in it which we don't anticipate. I'm pleased we haven't thrown the work out that we've done to date to go back to the beginning, because if we did so, we'd still get back to this point and we'd still have different areas of points that we wouldn't be all agreeing on totally. That's the way it is. But in the meantime, to delay the process means there's more and more outcomes, development outcomes that will continue to happen that we're not going to be able to address. And so by moving forward today, we're going to close in on that time frame in which we've got no further controls over the development. And I think it's important, even when the new city plan amendments all go through, there's still a period of time in which they, for about 12 months, I believe, they operate together. So this isn't going to be a turning around of the ship on a diamond, as I'd say, in the States. It's going to take some time to see the effects of it. In Redland Bay, there's lots of intensified developments happening and planning, and it's going to change the nature of the community down there. And I'm really pleased to see that we've got some improvements in the car parking provisions, because that always tends to cause some angst, no matter where you are, whether it's a small lot housing development or something of several stories. So that's some good things about it. I'm also pleased to see that we've got some character zoning in on the islands, which will allow for some additional community service functions that aren't really going to impact. I would have liked to have seen some additional changes, but I'm not going to focus on the negatives here. I think there's a lot of positives here. The biggest positive for all of this is for us to move forward, to get something of substance off to the Minister, and hopefully we can get a better outcome and we can address a lot of those issues that have given us some problems over the past. So, like everybody, not 100%, but I think it's as good as it gets. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Councillor Elliott?
No, I'm sorry, I'm going to be long-winded. Thank you, Mayor. I'll just read. That is a warning. That is a warning. Yeah. I'll be asking for extension of time in half an hour. get lunch in. Thanks, Mayor. I'm just going to go through the categories, and it's just the way I do things. That's it. In population, in growth. I'll just read from the document, and this is I'm trying to spell this to the average Joe that this is where we're going. It's noted in the minimum lot size associated with residential zones in the current planning scheme and proposed city plan remain largely unchanged. Importantly, the urban residential zone and current scheme identifies a minimum lot size of 350 square metres as a probable solution, while the proposed city plan identifies a minimum lot size of 400 in the comparable low-density zoning. That's to say we've increased it 50. You know, we're taking this on board. Councillor Golly's alluded to that, and council has taken that on board. The proposed city plan introduces a new intermediate zone being between medium density units and the traditional residential housing called low medium density residential. This zone is generally on larger lots, were less sensitive to impacts on existing streetscapes and in locations within close proximity to services. In determining the impact of the LMDR zone and associated potential small lot housing, it's recognised that the zone occupies only 5% of all land zone to accommodate residential purpose on the mainland, with the majority contained in the Kinross Road and the South East Thornlands new development area. The LMDR zone is a translation of the current urban res, so this is nothing new, Council. It's got a new name, which already provides the ability to establish multiple dwellings. And considering the improved perceived impacts of smaller housing, these matters may be addressed through the management of high-quality build form outcomes expressed through the zone codes of the proposed city plan. Through the expressed built form outcomes of the zone codes, together with the appropriate siting of zones to accommodate such development, the proposed city plan seeks to ensure the established character and amenity of the city is not detracted from while meeting changing housing needs and affordability challenges. Move on to 1.2, double jump road zoning. Submissions have been grouped together to create a defined precinct for consideration referred to as the double jump road south precinct. This area is defined in the aerial photograph below by the double jump road to the north and Giles Road to the south. If I get any of these wrong, councillors, please jump in. Council rejected this. In our analysis, the proposed city plan provides sufficient land for urban purposes to meet future population growth to 2041 without the need to expand the urban footprint south of Double Jump Road. I move on to Worthing Road Zone, same issue. Submissions have been grouped together, create a defined precinct for consideration referred to the Worthing Road precinct. This has been on since Adam was a boy, councillors and community. We again reject this. We say the proposed city plan provides sufficient land for urban purposes to meet future population growth to 2041 without the need to expand the urban footprint into Worthing Road. Goes on to say, it is recognised that the intent of the rural zone and the proposed city plan is not simply for rural production purposes, but also for the protection of natural resources and significant environmental and landscape values. This intent of the rural zone closely aligns with the regional landscape and rural production area designation of the locality under the SEQ regional plan. Acknowledging the high ecological and environmental values that are present throughout the locality, it's considered the land is appropriately left located within the rural zone, notwithstanding that some areas within the Worthing Road precinct may not be suitable for rural production purposes. Just a quick stick on the 1.4, the Thornlands Future Growth Investigation Area. On page 11 at the bottom, Future Growth Investigation designation. The primary purpose of this designation is to ensure that the area is not prejudiced by incompatible or preemptive development before a full and proper planning investigation has occurred that establishes the appropriate land use characteristics of the area, whether they be urban or non-urban. While this area has been long planning history and has been the subject of several employment investigations, a proper land use investigation in the area has not been undertaken yet, but it actually is. It is therefore considered premature to place the place in the urban zone without further establishing its need, suitability and viability, and then its extent in the land use profile. A further report will be presented to Council considering the need, suitability and viability of this area as an integrated employment area. That means to the community, there is a study underway. We've had one look and it's coming back in a month or so's time, I'm told, and we'll have a look at it then. Southern Redland Bay, the Future Growth Investigation Area. I'll probably read just the end. Number of submissions received. It has been approved shoreline. The number of submissions received sought to have the investigation area designated removed from the Southern Redland Bay area. The designation under the proposed city plan is a more broad translation of the current investigation under the RPS. Seeks to identify a general area of investigation, does not identify individual lots. There are, however, clear environmental and topographical constraints within the Carrabrook Wetlands Conservation Park and Council conservation areas to the west, Moreton Bay to the east, and extensive areas, high-value bushland and other values to the south. The future urban growth investigation is proposed not defined to specific cadastral boundaries. The definition of the boundaries is more appropriately done as part of the planning investigation after commencement of the proposed city plan. Any findings from this investigation can be then fed into the amendment to the city plan at a later date, and we've already had one look at that. Infill development. Support for infill development, and I'm a supporter of infill development. appropriate incentives are near train stations, allowing for higher densities to accommodate population growth rather than destroying environmental values outside of the urban areas of the city. Necessary to accommodate forecast population growth, provides for and supports greater housing choice and addresses affordability within the city, reduces the need to destroy rural and environmental lands outside the urban footprint. Infill development has reduced infrastructure cost to ratepayers compared to the greenfield subdivisions. These were submissions to us. I endorse those type of submissions, and if you want a better public transport in this city, you have to do it. Moving on to 1.7, the Emerging Community Zone Double Jump Road. I'll simply say, page 19, expansion of the SEQ Plan Urban Footprint Emerging Community Zone. She'd recognise the emergency community zone identifies an area of approximately 25 hectares for future urban purposes that is located outside of the current urban footprint of the SEQ Regional Plan. Council has the ability to identify areas outside the urban footprint for urban purposes. This was considered by the state government in their state interest review and accepted by the minister. Additionally, the new draft SEQ Regional Plan was recently released for public consultation and now includes the entirety of the emergency community zone within the proposed urban footprint. This key change in the urban footprint evident in the draft regional plan confirms the proposed city plan's alignment with the future regional planning intent of the area. Moving on to 1.9, the Birkdale Commonwealth land. There has been speculation in the community. I noticed that, you know, we shouldn't have it in the plan. I think we should, because you can do all the studies you like, and we're going to buy this block of land, as I understand, and when we can tie the Commonwealth down to a price, probably. But I agree with it being in the urban footprint, and it can be out of the urban footprint. You can do all the investigations, but I think if we're the people buying it, we're going to be setting the standards, and I think this sort of sums it up. I said a new special enterprise may establish at Birkdale utilising surplus Commonwealth land, currently the communications facility site. This precinct may focus on clean industry in association with tertiary education and training facilities. Development does not occur prior to the site-based investigation, feasibility assessments which establish an appropriate role and layout, ensure the protection of significant ecological and heritage values on this land. We're the best people to own this land. In 110, the low-density residential zone, the minimum lot size, I've read the minimum lot size, which now says that we say in the performance outcomes, we say reconfiguration maintains the low-density character of the street. Lots less than 400 square metres are not created. So we're telling you quite clearly 400 is the go. Presently at Kinross Road, as I alluded to before, we're punching out 350s. We need this to be adopted. Not that we can stop it, there's a year's translation, but we clearly indicate to the development industry we'd like our community saying we want larger lot sizes. I'll move on to the character residential zone, page 29. On the Southern Modway Islands, flexibility is provided to establish a limited number of range of additional small-scale non-residential to provide service to the community. I must say I pushed this, but I was concerned that code assessment for healthcare services, Red End Care, retirement village shop and veterinary surgeon, I really didn't want them popping up beside the average Joe on the street. Last thing I'd want to see is that a shop happening to me and I didn't know about and things like that. So it's impact assessable now. I think that's fair to the community around. It's going to be it's a pressure cooker over there and it's going to get worse. A limited range of small-scale non-residential use that provides services to the local and tourist community, such as food and drink outlet, roadside stall and childcare centre or community use may be established where there's not significant detract from the residential amenity and do not compromise the role of any centre. And that was my concern. As an ex-shopkeeper, I didn't particularly want little shops jumping up there, white-handing tenants in these shopping centres that have to pay higher rents. But also note that we changed the setbacks from 3 metres, well, it was 20%, within 20% of the average front setback of an adjoining building, or where there are no adjoining buildings, 3 metres, that was actually put back to 6 metres. Moving on, point lookout, I think it's been dressed well. I think Councillor Mitchell made a good piece of that. In the low medium density residential zone. Probably just want to comment on it has been stated. Council was we went out with 7.5 metres and 5.5 metre widths and 250 size blocks. I've seen evidence of small lots in South East Longlands and I don't like it. I was in Western Australia in 2008 on a planning study with council and I saw these buildings there. And the only way I saw, they're great up next to a shopping centre, but not out in the burbs, and they had rear entry driveways, and it just was ugly. It was just ugly. There were rubbish bins, back lanes. I can't support it, and I think council's seized the initiative, and the 10 by 400 is simply the way to go. Median density residential. I have a problem with this. On page 43, in relation to food and drink outlets, the proposed city plan identifies this use as code accessible in the MDR zone, medium density residential. We're located on the ground floor. We're part of the mixed use development only at a small scale of 250 square metres. That's a reasonable shop. MDR zone land is intended to provide medium density living, and the purpose of 250 food and drink outlet is to facilitate small convenience outlets to service these densities. It sounds okay, but I don't want to see any more shops than in the centres. I think the centres is the best way to go. We start white-handing our whole thing. I also didn't agree in the setbacks on page 44. The intent of the zone is to realise multiple dwellings and therefore lots containing dwelling houses subject to renewal at some point and should not dictate the front setback alignment. The proposed city plan removes this and identifies a 3 metre setback in the acceptable outcome. I don't agree with it, and I think we should stick with 6 metres. Moving on. Reconfiguring a lot, page 51. We say minimum width for the access ways in a residential zone category 4.5, we're servicing one lot behind the house, or 6 metres where we're serving more than one lot. Presently, I'm seeing performance-based outcomes of 3.5, and I consider 3.5 would have been a satisfactory outcome for a single lot behind, but obviously the 6 metres full too. Moving on to industry and mixed use, page 9. It's page 10. It says high-impact industries which service the Redland community may occur where impacts can be mitigated and managed so they're not substantially greater than the medium-intensity industry activities. I don't agree with that at all. I think it will be a compliance nightmare, and I don't think we need to do it. And how you can tell that a high-impact that will service the Redland community, how do you do that? You take your business from anywhere you can go when you're a shopkeeper, trust me. The environment has been touched on. I agree there's a cross-section there. I'd also highlight that on page 5, the matters of local environment significance were not applied to lots less than 2,000 was the original proposal in the urban area zone for urban development. This decision aligned with the mapping methodology established the major of the matters of state environmental significance. However, council, in reviewing its submissions, considered that applying the MLES on land greater than 1,000 is appropriate. And I think it did bring a lot more blocks into the view, but I think that was a needed outcome. Sorry? I remember the time we asked for all the lots. The use of the performance outcomes with no acceptable solutions nominated for the environmental significance and other environmental outlay codes is intended to reflect the variable nature of environmental impacts from development, which can differ from site to site depending on the values presented as well as the nature and scale of development being proposed, and I think that was good. I'll now move on to the submission specific requests. We're nearly there, councillors. Now, there was hardly a submission from Hanover Drive. I think there was 165 against and 2 for, and the bloke on Saturday was against it too. Much of the housing, our analysis of it was much of the housing stock in these areas, and trust me, to the community, through the mayor, we went out with the intention of we were asking your opinion, and you came back with baseball bats as the political answer was. And we took note, but the only way you can test the water is to ask you, and that's all it was. We asked and we've replied. Much of the housing stock in these areas is relatively young. There is sufficient zone land to 2041. The submissions indicate significant opposition from landowners in the estate to the proposed LDR zoning. And I congratulate councillors on that, and that was unanimous. Moving forward. I'll raise this one, 52 to 60 Flinders Street, Alexandra Hills. This one bobs up every planning scheme. And you'll note the difference. The summary grounds, the property represent excellent infill development, surrounded by urban development, well serviced by public transport and shopping precincts. Our analyst said, spot zoning and isolated from urban areas, not connected to sewer, significant environmental values on the site and surrounding areas. So it's no change, it stays as environmental management. I'm happy council kept that in place. 14 Kenton Street, Alexandra Hills, was the property address. This was the Kenton Street Park. I noticed supports, actually there was something else on it, supports the change of zoning from open space to conservation under the city trail plan. I think that's a good outcome because it's a conservation area. It was an unused park for years and years and years. We have identified, I don't know if we're making any statement on page 16 about what I raised about the future urban growth investigation area. That's
16 of the submission. Officer's going to be dealing that with that
later?
Yeah.
I did notice a couple. It was one particularly was, and I'm sorry I didn't raise this early, councillors. It was potential. It had nobody's name, but it was the potential of a mixed-use zone from Brewer Street to Davidson Road, and it had nobody on it. But it was, is that us suggesting that? Sorry, I just can't find it at the moment.
The Brewer Street to Jones,
here it is. It's on
page It was the interface 20, of industrial to residential.
Yeah, page 20. This was just one. Sorry, I missed this, officers and councillors. Page 23 at the top. The property address is Cleveland Road East, Capella Bar, and submission request was medium density residential zone to mixed use zone. Was that somebody or was that us? You know, did this accidentally slip into the? Yeah.
Through the chair. So that's 238 to 254 Old Cleveland Road. So on page 22, the start of that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's the property.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I didn't see that down the bottom. Sorry.
That's the property on the corner of Brewer Street and connects through to Anderson Street and Old Cleveland Road.
Fair enough. That's okay. That's cleared up. I wondered if that was, we were just having a think about that or whatever. Okay, Nellie there. On page, additional considerations on page 58, 521 Old Cleveland Road East Birkdale. This is actually our own land. And we've got reduced portion of the site zone, low to medium density residential to the area zone, community purpose under the current planning scheme. I don't support that CP zoning going to low to medium density residential. That's all I'd like to say on that. I was happy with the conservation being returned to where it was, but I'm not happy. And I think in planning terms, I think it's we're putting this in the middle of nowhere. We're not close to a shop. You know, shops are miles up the road. It's in the middle of nowhere, and I think it's should either go to conservation. But anyway, I've had my say. That's just the one. And I think we're nearly there. Some things are spoken around in the document and come back up again. Now, that's it for me, Matt, but I'd just like to say to the community, there are things like Hanover Drive, where the community is very agitated about the consultation we had. They're the things I want to fix up and get sorted today so they can move on. And this is a recommendation to the Minister, and the Minister has to have a look at it. And hopefully those will be accepted by us. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to speak to Division 8. And just speaking on behalf of my residents with regard to the city plan that we're currently debating, I'd like to outline a couple of issues that have consistently been raised with me over the previous months. And I'll start with 61 McMillan Road, and we have all had that history there of that piece of land. It was originally a when the plan came out for discussion, it was proposed to dispose of the land by public auction or tender, and subsequently at a previous council meeting on the 27th of January 2016, council resolved to rescind that. And on behalf of the community in Division 8, they're very thankful, and the community were, as Murray indicated, were loud. They were very, very passionate that that land be saved, and it's proud that we can stand here today, if this city plan goes through, that that stays at conservation zone. With the community, I've had a couple of meetings on that particular piece of land supported by our conservation officers, and we've got some plans happening on that land, and we are actually also looking at renaming that piece of land with the conservation for a local family that have been there for many years, and they contribute to the area and the city as a wider, very significant contribution. So that's not official. That is just being investigated, and I'm hopeful that something will come of that. In support with Murray with the 521 Old Cleveland Road East, Birkdale, that same piece of land, we have discussed that regarding that change of zone, and I'm also supporting of Murray. I didn't support that change, so I'd like that recorded. Thank you. The residents of Dean Road in Alexandra Hill were very passionate in their submissions. We did receive some submissions to change the low density residential precinct to down to low density residential. Conversely, we had a whole lot of submissions that were overwhelming support to save and keep the land to support the low density residential precinct too. And we had some analysis of that. The coverage of parts of the site were bushland habitat under the Koala SPRP, and bushfire hazard makes low-density residential development difficult to achieve. The strategic framework sets to avoid exposure of people and property to bushland hazard. And on behalf of the residents, they are very delighted and very thankful that this property, these properties will stay at low-density residential precinct too. This is a personal note. Many of the residents, not understanding the planning, and it's hard enough for us to understand even a quarter of the planning, the difference between impact and code. And people say it doesn't happen, but in my division, across Birkdale, some of it, an old name, Gardenia Drive and Rossington Streets, people go to work in the morning and come home and the house across the road's disappeared. And that's the first that they know that there's something afoot. They knew Mrs. whoever was a bit poorly and had been put into a nursing home, the family's come in, and the property is now up for development. And I'd just like to put on record that under the planning scheme, and it's currently the Sustainable Planning Act 2009, that is where the legislation comes in for impact assessable development and code assessable development. If the development is compliant with the application in the current zone, it is code. The development becomes impact, it is if it is different to the intent of the zone. It's pretty hard to understand, but the residents, all they want to know is what's going on next door. But unfortunately, the law and this Planning Act does not allow for us to let them know. And the frustration is enormous out there. I'd just like to support the residents in that. If I could have changed it, I jolly well would have. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think the first thing that we need to note when we're talking about the planning scheme is simply that the planning scheme is a tool that is meant to regulate development. There's a lot of talk about all of the other things that councillors expect from the planning scheme in relation to transport policy or heritage policy or environmental management. The planning scheme is there to regulate development, and all of those other things and all of those other concerns are managed through other policies and other instruments. This plan's gone out to public consultation over nearly twice the period that's required under the regulation, and as Councillor Elliott noted, we do have to act within the legislation. There is a strict regime around preparing a planning scheme, and that has been met to the letter by our very competent officers and through many, many hours and of discussion and workshops. There are some really good improvements in this plan, as Councillor Mitchell mentioned, which I would not like to see delayed. The concerns in the community that Councillor Golay mentioned about small lot housing are absolutely there, and in the same way that he mentioned, I've been out talking to people in those communities around Southern Redland, and whilst they understand the need for development, they're very concerned about the intensification through lot size and parking. So to delay this planning scheme going up to state interest review will delay the bringing in of those improvements for our livability in our communities, and so I would not advise councillors to do that today. Low-density residential zone makes up 83.8% of housing in our city. So this plan takes that probable solution back up to 400 square metres for greater than 83.8% of our housing areas. Redland is anticipated through this plan to accommodate only 1% of the growth that is expected through southeast Queensland will occur over the period of the efficacy of this plan. As was mentioned by Councillor Elliott, through a decision of Council to drop the assessment from 2,000 to 1,000 square metres in the urban zone for environmental and vegetation protection, 2,800 more lots came into consideration. This was important because people were concerned about the loss of vegetation in the urban areas where that is under threat. Worthing Road, Kingfisher Road area is an area that's been lobbied and talked about for many, many years and has again not been changed in this plan, but I would hope that it would be further reviewed when we go through the amendment packages. There are, to my mind, a lot of areas. There are submissions that we received from the areas in Heinemann Road and, of course, through what was formerly known as the TIEA and the investigation area. And Council has a lot more work to do in receiving further reports in regard to that area. And I think that once those areas and the future of those areas become more clear through those reports, then further consideration should be given to other areas. I'm certainly still keen through a further process in the future to look at having rural residential areas for our community. I think we need that as a housing choice as well, and we don't have it at the moment. Victoria Point Centre Zone has not been upscaled from a major zone to a principal zone in this plan. That was something that was asked for by the centres, and it was something that we didn't have recommendation from the officers to do. In this plan, tourism is easier and agribusiness is easier. Vegetation is managed to a higher environmental standard while finding a reasonable measure of autonomy and respect for landowners in the rural zone. Landowners needing to manage their property and their risk, particularly as we can see from the plan that we have the upgraded fire mapping, which shows the increased fire risk for those people living in those zones. Ecological corridors and waterways are protected. I would like to thank councillors for their mature approach to trusting our residents to manage their private properties, to manage their vegetation and to manage their risk, especially in light of that fire risk mapping. We don't need to manage every aspect of every person's backyard. We need to trust that the people who have been looking after our rural and our bushland zone for the last 100 years, the residents who live there, will continue to do so. And I would suggest that since we've spent, what was the figure, $3 million, Madam Mayor, and 3 years taking professional advice and professional reports, that it would be inadvisable, particularly in light of the fact that residents need to have the opportunity to make a submission there is a change.
This document isn't about the trust of residents. We're not talking about a religious document here. This is the planning scheme.
What part of the standing order are you referring
to? Well, she's talking about...
Councillor, what part of the standing order are you referring to as far as your point of order?
My point of order is the information is not related to the planning scheme. Talking about trust of residents.
Madam Mayor, I would suggest that allowing residents...
With the greatest respect, I have let everyone have their say, and I'm going to do the same for everyone around the room. Thank you. Councillor Tolter, you may continue.
Madam Mayor, several councillors have raised the fact that in the rural zone, we have allowed a threshold of 2,500 square metres for homeowners if they need to do some clearing in order to manage their properties, in order to build a shed, in order to do whatever it is that they feel that they need to do on their property, whether that's fire risk management or building a dam or any other number of things that they might want to do. So I think that it's reasonable to suggest that that offers them some autonomy and the opportunity to decide how they best can manage their property and manage their risk before they need to come into council, should they have to do anything significant on their properties, over 2,500 square metres, then they come in and they go through that approval process. And I think that is trusting our residents to manage their properties and manage their risk. And I think that that is absolutely reasonable, and it is what my residents expect, and it is what my residents expect me to defend on their behalf. I think it is a very good outcome that we've increased the frontage in residential urban areas from 7.5 to 10 metres, and then increasing the setbacks, also allowing for greater car parking. And I don't think really lot size is so much to do with that. I think that the frontages getting narrower is what creates the image for people that they feel most uncomfortable with. I think I'll leave it there, Madam Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Tolte. Councillor Gleeson.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. What an exciting day. A whole lot of work's gone behind this, and first off, I'd like to start by saying thank you to the officers that are involved. Many of us here, I won't say many, but many of us here, first time through a planning scheme, and we don't go into these things as experts, and sometimes the officers have had to get down to kindergarten level and talk us through it, and the process sometimes I could imagine would be very frustrating, but they've done a great job, and I'd like to thank them to start off with. Look, I don't think there's a councillor in the room who didn't get into council at some point with a thought in the back of the mind that, you know, they didn't like a particular planning decision that was made or a particular development application that was approved. And I don't think there's a councillor in the room who hasn't gotten a bit of grief from their residents because of an application that's been approved since we've been in here. And trying to get residents to understand it's because we've been subject to the 2006 planning scheme, and it's out of our hands, it's within the provisions, has been very, very hard, and today's a really good day. There are a lot of improvements in here that address the residents' concerns, certainly since I've been in council in the last 5 years. Some of those things are right-to-light provisions for high-rise developments. I've got the roads development at Capalaba going straight 19 storeys beside a townhouse complex. Well, now there's a step-up process through there. We've got increased parking for unit developments. I've argued for a long time that we don't require enough car parking, and that's why we get problems like we do in Holland Crescent with car parks out on the roads, and so we've increased that requirement. Our environmental corridors are stronger than ever. Our mapping is better, it's more accurate, and the environment ultimately will benefit from it. Our open spaces were removed from the plan. We all listened to our residents, and the parks were gone. Sorry, the rezoning of those open spaces were gone. And that did make up a hell of a lot of our submissions that we received. So straight away, I think we've taken care of a large portion of the community's concerns over that. In Capalaba, there's no residential upzoning in this plan. We have a lot of parcels of land that haven't been taken up from the 2006 plan yet. And so we still will see upzoning going through, houses knocked down and replaced by townhouses that was zoned for that 11 years ago, but zero based on this plan. going back to the UR1 requirements of 400 square metres and a 10 metre wide frontage for me was a great win. I didn't like the 7.5 metre wide frontage. I thought that would just give us grief out there in the community. I don't think the residents would appreciate that at all. So that's been very good. Look, overall, this is going to give us a lot better powers, and the sooner we can get this through to the state government and hopefully get approved, hopefully it won't take 9 months for these amendments to go through, but I'm looking forward to it coming back so that we can actually take these measures on behalf of the residents. One thing I disagree with, and we've got no control over, is the state government have introduced a new zone called community housing, and I think there's no place for it here in the Redlands. It was introduced in Brisbane around the universities to provide for cheaper accommodation for university students. Personally, we don't have that demand out here in the Redlands. It will cause us grief with neighbouring properties, and we haven't allocated any parcels of land to that zoning, so that's really good for me. And if there was any attempt to bring that in at some point down the track, I'll be fighting tooth and nails for it. But I think it's...
Point of order, Ben. Point of order. The councillor's misleading the public that we actually allow it in the centres, rooming accommodation in the centres.
I was going to allow him finish and get the officers to respond.
Okay. And that was my last point, so I'll hand back.
Point of clarity, if I may, officers, just in regards to that community housing provision, if you might just articulate that it is allowed in our centres and our centres only.
So the relevant term is rooming accommodation within the defined terms. And within the draft city plan, it's contained to the areas within our centres and in our medium density and low medium density areas. So the areas that are around the centres or within the centres.
Councillor Bishop, you'll raise some other issues other than what you raised earlier.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Yes, indeed. As I said before, officers have been extraordinary. They need to navigate that delicate place between statutory recommendations and requirements and legislation, and we, the councillors, we who design, effectively, this plan. I'd just like to speak a little bit about why the planning is so important. In a place like Birkdale, where we have aquatic paradise, we have aquatic properties, we've also got small caravan parks, we've got large park residential, a lot of cul-de-sac areas, a very diverse range of aspects of the city that need to be managed. And going forward, those things will all come under pressure by economic and also design terms. And I think that's why it's really important that the design process is robust and looks at keeping those finely nuanced balances. Speaking specifically to some of the changes in Birdwood Road and Hague Road, there were some proposed changes. I appreciate that some of the residents may have expected the outcome to be as it was proposed in the plan. It's actually been pulled back to the existing densities of that area. The parks that were proposed for sale, the community spoke in a very loud and clear voice, and it's great to see that one of the areas, a bush care group has come together and convened, and they are taking up the slack that we say it costs council a lot of money to look after the land. The community stepped up and backed themselves, and they've got a community bush care group that's actually making sure that site's being looked after. That's a fantastic thing and an example of when community act together that can really help the city. The storm tide mapping that has been consulted with both Aquatic Paradise and Raby Bay and also to some degree the Sovereign Lakes area. There are many other people in the Thomas Tamakaha area that are to be impacted even with the revised studies. I think it's important that they are notified, and I know they will be through letters that are coming. I think it's very important that they are aware that there's a lot of conjecture about the International Panel for Climate Change and the various 0.8 metre sea level rise that's used in the projections. I think it's very good to see that council officers have gone back and had those further discussions with state, with community, and come up with a position that not all are going to agree to, but it gives us as council a line of sight going into the future so that we can back ourselves and allow people to plan with certainty. I'd just like to talk to a couple of points in relation to the intention of the plan, which is to remove duplication and doublespeak, which I think is a very good thing. It's good to see the document is reduced down. What it also does is that requires reduced down in terms of the amount of words used, but the clarity was intended to say what we mean and mean what we say, which is a very good thing to do. With that, there's a slight challenge, I believe, which is that we have been saying we want to move to more prescriptive-based planning and give people certainty, and I know the Mayor has sent letters in that regard asking for the State to allow that with more clarity. What we've effectively done is move to an environment where performance-based planning is increasingly the norm. It means that assessment and development applications, when they come to council, it means that our officers will be playing a very important role in terms of the feel of how properties will be assessed and possibly adjusted in. Can I ask for a clarification? Do you want me to continue, or will we put up with this?
Excuse me, councillor.
What? Is that a point of order, Madam Mayor?
That is right, and that's how you would normally ask the Chair, Councillor, if you're aware of your standing orders. I think they're asking you to talk to the points and make sure they're clear. What is your
Can I ask for clarification on this point?
Thank you, Councillor. What is your point of order, Councillor?
My point of order is that the Councillor is reviewing on the process a part of the process that doesn't exist. The officers do not operate in that way, and the way that he suggested they operate would be inappropriate.
Thank you, Councillor.
That's in the view of a councillor. Can I ask for...
I'll ask for officer to respond.
So in relation to that, Chris, we were having a discussion yesterday.
So let the officer respond, thank you.
Through the chair. So we operate within a performance-based planning process. That's how the current Sustainable Planning Act operates, and that's how the new Planning Act will operate. But within that, we can build in provisions that where council sees, are non-negotiable or wants to put in prescription, it can do. So the example within a change that's been proposed to the planning scheme is minimum lot size within the residential areas. So that's been moved up in the hierarchy to overall outcomes, but so it sets that level of prescription. So it's where council sees the benefit in doing that.
Continue, please, Councillor Bishop.
Which underlines the importance of us getting our local area planning correct and clear for us all, so that we're aware of where we want that increased density, which may be absolutely appropriate for that place, so that we can be clear with our officers. I'll certainly be chatting with my community more about the expectations that they have within the context of this new plan. In terms of properties, I'll come back to that in a second. There are some challenges in the city that we know in relation to the Southern Moreton Bay Islands. We've got some outstanding issues to do with infrastructure there that need to be managed. We've also got the emerging issue of transition on Stradbroke Island that needs to be addressed, and the city plan has some elements in terms of managing those. Also, in terms of arguably out of sequence developments, we've also got to think about the transport impacts of things like the Southern Redlands development, which are beyond the urban footprint but are now locked into our future planning, and we would really benefit from having a robust transport strategy that would
point
deal
order,
with
Madam
some
Mayor.
Of those.
Well, we've been down that track. I don't believe the council is sticking to the agenda.
There is a submission in regards to that, so you may continue.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So I do believe that we need to be very mindful of the impacts and the constraints. Just keep your finger off the button, please, my friend, if I may.
Councillor Bishop.
Yes, Madam Mayor.
I don't think that was necessary. So please, if you can be respectful.
I'd like to have the same ability for
Bishop,
fellow councillors to allow me to speak.
We have standing orders, and every councillor around this room abides by that, and they are able to call a point of order.
I know, but I'd like to keep the finger off the button if he could.
Thank you, Councillor. You can probably just move on with your 5 minutes.
Yeah, sure. Okay, allow my endorphins to be coursing through my veins as my overzealous friend guards my every word. If I can just focus on the in relation to the heritage study and the point that I mentioned before, that the difference between a heritage study and a heritage strategy, I think it's very important when people come to this council that they have guidance and that we have documentation that outlines the very things that we consider to be of significance in terms of heritage. Now, I know that there are other state and federal government acts that deal with things to do with particularly Indigenous cultural heritage, but I think it's important that we have in our heritage plan line of sight between our heritage expectations in the community and the tying that together with Indigenous cultural heritage. And then there's a question of broader cultural heritage matters to do with South Sea Islander cultural heritage. There is a certain significant history that we have that...
You might be swaying a little bit off now, Councillor, off the agenda. Mind you've already
and,
had an opportunity to
and,
talk some of those issues.
In relation to European development patterns and how architectural structures have changed over time, there's things like scenic amenity, views and management. That's in the report. It's actually speaking specifically to do with the issues of...
Every extra word you use now to explain that, you're losing time to explain the rest of what you've got written down there, Councillor. So you move on. Thank you.
Did we take a time, Madam Mayor, through you of the
we
other speakers?
We actually did. And we did actually have this discussion, Councillor Bishop, that you have had an opportunity through your alternative motion, and you're more than welcome to raise new information so that everyone here can get on with making that decision and have all that information and debate in front of them.
I'd like to come to the Birkdale Commonwealth Lands, if I may, and speak of this irreplaceable portion of a very significant land speaking to what I was mentioning before, the fact that we've been alerted via various reports and other agencies about the significance of the block of land that we now own in terms of the Willard Farm property and the contiguous nature of the broader parcel of land. When we come to managing the future planning for that area, inclusion in the urban footprint concerns me. We had an officer report suggesting that it did not need to be included at this stage and that there is great merit in considering further studies that would be worth our while to give us surety that before it's included in the urban footprint that we do those studies and make absolutely certain that the issues to do with that land are addressed and managed, because we will never get a place like that ever again, and it tells us an enormous amount about our history and where we're going, especially the fact that it's been used consistently for 150 years for agricultural purposes with the adjusting of cattle right up until November 2014. Madam Mayor, with that, I do have a number of issues and concerns, as I mentioned. I'll finish up with this one. There's been a great deal of discussion in recent months and years, and I know certain lobbying to councillors for use of foreshore around our areas, looking for increased commercial potential opportunities, recreational, and down the track that would probably lead, you would think, naturally towards densification. It's very important, and I've been very aware as a resident who grew up in Wynnum, that there is a different culture of the way that this place has developed. We have never had commercial and waterfront places coexisting as Redcliffe and Wynnum, which are often used as the sort of places that we would like to emulate. I think there's an important discussion with the community.
So, Councillor, are you referring
about
to something in this document?
Yeah, it is. It's specifically
to
do...
Can you give me the page?
Yeah, I can. Page 6 of the submissions, Madam Mayor.
Okay.
It relates to the views, and then page... where is it? It's actually about corridor management, and basically it's about how are we going to actually plan those areas with certainty with the community if we don't have those conversations. And I think it's where we need to really go back to the community. The wisdom within the room is phenomenal, but the wisdom outside this room is much more valuable, I believe, and I think that we need to do whatever we can to get that certainty going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Moving on, if I may just have an opportunity to respond also. I think it's fair to say that at the beginning of this term of council that we all made a commitment that we would find a way to work together to find compromise and common ground. And I'd like to congratulate the councillors to date. Certainly when we embarked on this particular journey of the planning scheme. You know, we actually started a lot longer ago than this term of council, but it's fair to say that over 100 hours of debate and 26 workshops, we started out in the framework that it would be an 80-20 rule and that none of us are going to be completely happy, and that would be reflected in our community. And certainly over the last number of days, we've received lots and lots of emails and lobbying from special interest groups across the city. And it is reminiscent of my first planning scheme, and I know I heard some comments from the rookies, as was described by Councillor Golay, as to how those how they may be impacted by such lobbying. At the end of the day, we have inherited a legacy of policy and strategy and state legislation that we have to work within, and to tell the community we can do otherwise is not honest, and it's not fair, and it doesn't deliver the outcomes for our future for Redland City and embracing the values that we have. So when I set out on this journey, the two things that I asked for from councillors was a way to find consensus. We certainly dealt with consultation in a much more thorough way than any item that I can recall in my history here in council. But the most important thing was that clarity, because planning is complex no matter how you put this scheme together or how you put regional plans or town plans together. It is very complex, and it's difficult for anyone in the public who's not exposed to this on a regular basis to understand what could happen in their community, hence why our consultation was thorough, hence why we sent a letter to every landowner. So they knew this process was happening, because many times over the last decade or so, the number of people who have said to us, "I didn't know that was happening." Well, as Councillor Elliott articulated earlier, when he had a phone call from a resident on the weekend, there really is little excuse for not being informed at least of the process. But let me come back to the clarity, because yes, I have lobbied the government in regards to its performance-based planning approach, and I believe that this council, all of you around the room, have dealt with that in the best way possible within the constraints of the legislation. We've implanted those things that are very important to our community within the overall outcomes, and you'll see that throughout the document. So it's not a perfect system. It won't be a perfect plan, but we've done what we can within our capacity as local government to do just that. I just wanted to also reflect on sort of utopia that some people think might happen in local government, or in any government for that matter, that all policies will be ready for every decision of council to make a way forward. To really reflect on this process, some of the studies that have been referred to started in 2011. The housing strategy, for example. A former mayor was overlooked that particular process, and that has been referred to and noted by the officers informing this. And in that particular document, it referred to the fact that we need housing diversity and we need affordability. Many of us are making decisions today based on the comments of people living here right now. Many of those people are part of our ageing population, but the fact is we actually are planning for the future, and that housing diversity and affordability will become an issue for future generations. And that's already been reflected in some of the reports that we're seeing outside of this particular process in regards to how we're going to deal with growing the jobs in our aged care sector and our social and health sector. We will need to have jobs for those people to support us in our twilight years, and they need to be able to afford to live in this city, because they'll have a choice of other places where housing is more affordable. If I could just say that, you know, once again, for me, the two things I put on the table at the beginning of this journey was to find consensus, that 80-20, and to find that clarity. But I do have concerns that we won't have that diversity. Some of the changes we've heard about today, we'll see. What's very popular in the market right now, and I think Councillor Golay referred to that in his area, where we have got small lot houses and very happy families who can own their own home and their own piece of land, moving into this city and giving their contribution, and I guess ultimately providing jobs for the sectors around that. I think some of the changes that we've spoken about today will in fact probably drive more townhouses, and that's been a point of concern for many of our residents as well. So I have concerns, and I guess we'll see how that rolls out, because this is a living document. And as I said, you can't have every policy you want to back up every single decision that you make in here that's current. 2011, we started this journey with a housing strategy. The rural futures strategy that we had actually highlighted the fact that it was prohibitive for small agricultural enterprise to start a business in this city. I can give you an example in this city where to move a horticultural enterprise, just to put a DA in, costs between $50,000 and $60,000. It's a lot of lettuces you have to sell to be able to allow that to happen. And yet, we pride ourselves and our heritage on our salad bowl history, and we also see that as a future growth opportunity for our city. So what this has put forward is an opportunity for those rural enterprises to have a go, be a start-up business in this city, and I think most people celebrate that. If I could just talk about some of the other conjecture that's been out there in the last few days. And once again, referring to the complexity of the decisions we make in here in regards to the future urban growth area in Thornlands. To make it very clear, there was a ministerial directive that we put a star in an area and we do the investigations. In the discussions across the region, we acknowledge that that future urban growth area has different meanings to different areas, but it is articulated by the officers in state that they acknowledge we have studies underway to identify what is the need for employment areas in that particular zone where the star is, and we need to get the best possible outcome, and studies are underway, and we need to have the evidence to back up those decisions so that we don't have a repeat of the horrible chaos that was caused by speculation back in 2006, 2009, 2011. And I'm committed to that, and there's a motion on the books, a mayoral minute, that makes sure that those studies are underway so that we can adopt them into future amendments. I just also want to, reflect on some of the things that have been set out in the community in regards to trying to ram the draft city plan through, saying there's insufficient time, it's a rush job. I don't know of a five-year process on one decision that I've ever undertook in this city or in this shire when it was back then that has been so thorough. We've had the organisation road test, every department road test elements of this particular plan. Once upon a time, it would be strategic senior planners who would sit there with a helicopter view and that they would put forward their ideas. Not so in this case. We went through to those officers who have to deal with the assessments and the conflicts that have now been resolved to make sure that it was a workable document that the community understood and the development industry understood. So that process was thorough. The process of consultation was thorough. And as I alluded to earlier, this process has cost ratepayers almost $3 million and 5 years. We have six strategic objectives for this term of council, and this is one of those that we can almost say we've completed in light of the fact that there will be more major amendments to come. So if you think 5 years is a rush job, I'm guilty. I'm definitely guilty. But I know this community has elected us to make decisions. And we can't consult until everybody gets exactly what they want, because that will never occur. And so if coming up with a planning scheme that is acceptable to most councillors is somehow wrong, I'm guilty of that as well, because that's certainly been my intention over that 26 workshops, and I'm pretty sure any councillor around here would agree that it's been tedious, it's been loud, it's been thorough, and we've come to a conclusion where we can move forward. I've already mentioned the 11 weeks of consultation and the level and depth of consultation. In addition to that, we've also had face-to-face activities. Many of the people in the room were part of those activities. 2,000 people to 13 open house forums, 13 pop-up displays at shopping centres, markets, parks, individual stakeholder briefings. We recorded more than 13,000 information hits on our website, And as you know, we had 5,347 public submissions, of which 254 were individually drafted, 10 submissions were submitted as petitions, and the remaining 5,097 were pro forma. Pretty much the grey hair that we all have around the table now is evidence, you the most there, Councillor Elliott, for the intensive review of those submissions that we've had. Thank you. So what I'd like to say to the people in the public gallery and councillors is what we have before us is an intense project of compromise. We've listened to the people and we've made those changes. Each and every one of us have articulated the things that we don't like, and many of us have articulated the things that we see are important to moving forward. Councillors have had access to individual meetings with officers numerous times, some more than others, and once again we all agree that we can't find 100% satisfaction for each and every one of us. As I said, I thank the councillors for their willingness to work together. I think this is a great test for us as elected representatives in Redland City who have agreed to do things differently and work together to find middle ground. And I just want to also acknowledge the fact that planning will continue to be grey. However, we have done our best to create some prescription and, you know, two levels of government, lots of input. There will always be different interpretations. I know, and councillors have talked about this, that's a reality out there that people don't understand planning. And they certainly don't recognise our restrictions, and that's been published and articulated many times by people who may have a slightly different agenda. When we set out on our journey to review this city plan, and I think Councillor Bishop took this line, which was one that was provided to us by a consultant, we set out to say what we mean and mean what we say within those state constraints. If we agree to the amendments today and provide our submission to the Minister, Council will also write every single submitter so they will know the outcome of their efforts in advising and providing their views to Council. I want to stress once again, the City Plan is not a finite document. All those strategies that we have talked about will ultimately have an opportunity to be considered and amended into this plan. We've already identified a number of issues that will form part of that major amendment package, and that will go out for further consultation and allow the community input. The package also includes things that councillors couldn't agree on. And for a few of which no submissions received, we've put that forward for further discussion and debate. But as has been said by most councillors in here, it is absolutely vital for us to take this plan forward so that we can address those issues that have been raised constantly since 2006. It's also important to note that the new Planning Act, just to complicate things, the state, you know, likes to do this every now and then to make them feel useful, it will come into play on the 1st of July. And we need approval in this chamber today so that we can send that plan to the Deputy Premier for approval and hopefully commence our planning scheme at the same time as that new Planning Act, so it's less confusion for our community. The alternative, which I don't think is a good option for us, is to stick with our current scheme. And I think we'll just continue to have the same issues that we've had over the period that I've certainly been dealing with this 2006 planning scheme. So with that, councillors, I think in the spirit of what we agreed to do up front and find compromise, and I thank you for your contribution today, my understanding is that we have some further discussion and I believe that we're going to just take an adjournment to have that discussion, and I think we'll allow enough time for that discussion. It has been discussed a lot already, but in order to have us move forward, I think it's important. Councillor Boglari, you want to move an adjournment? I would suggest that we have that adjournment till 2:30.
Thank you. Through the Chair, I'd like to move an adjournment until 2:30. Thank you.
Moved Councillor Boglari, seconded Councillor Elliott. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those against is Councillor Tolte. So for the members of the public gallery, feel free to go and spend some of your well-earned money in Cleveland and support our local businesses. If you wish to come back, we'll be reconvening at 2:30. Thank you, officers, and thank you. And I declare it adjourned at 12:04. All right, councillors, we will, if I could get a motion to recommence. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Bishop. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Look, just in order to explain to the public gallery that there was an amendment proposed, and therefore to make sure that it was technically correct, we needed to give the officers the time to craft that, as this will be going back to the Minister, and obviously we need to make sure it's technically credible and ready to go. So with that, I believe we're going to have a motion from the floor to actually move that amendment. Councillor... Oh, sorry. Coming with it. Which is about to appear in the screen. No. So what I might do before we take that motion is get the officer to explain it.
Through the chair. So the draft city plan at present identifies some exempt clearing thresholds within various parts of the city. This one specifically related to the rural zone. Within the rural zone in the current draft, it references an exempt threshold of 2,500 square metres of clearing without requiring the need for an approval, and then requiring a code assessable application after that. The amended motion includes an amendment to that, specifically for the rural zone, to delineate between a vacant property that does not contain a dwelling house and maintaining that provision for 2,500 square metres of allowable exempt clearing, but to identify that where there is a dwelling house on the site, that there's a different threshold identified. So in this case, clearing under 500 square metres where there's an existing house will be exempt. Where the clearing is between 500 square metres and 2,500 square metres, it will be self-assessable, which means it doesn't require an application if they comply with certain criteria that's specified in the planning scheme. And the one criteria that's specified for that self-assessable consideration is that they provide compensatory planting to replace any vegetation that's removed in a like-for-like, area-for-area basis. And then once again, it becomes code accessible where that clearing exceeds 2,500 square metres. So it's an amendment to the table of assessment to identify that trigger point.
Well, we don't have a motion yet, sorry, Councillor Tolte. So I'm just making sure that reflects the discussion.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
So the resolution will include the amendment to Table 8, whatever that is, point 2 point, correct? So that's been moved by Councillor Elliott. It's been seconded by Councillor Pogari. This is for the amendment, so we're voting on the amendment currently, councillors. Would you like to speak to that amendment? Just that part of it.
Thanks, Madam Chair. No, I won't. I think Chris summed it up, and most councils got it clear in their mind what they're on about now, so I'm happy to leave it go at that, but I'm sure there'll be discussion.
Speaker against the amendment, Councillor Tolte.
Also a question,
if you use the phrase equivalent compensatory planting, then, and we have no clarification on what that means, I think that you're in extreme danger of creating something that is going to be a significant problem for residents and officers who are trying to decide whether there's a compliance issue or not. I would have thought it would be better, and I'm asking the officers, is it better to have just simply compensatory planting, leaving the word equivalent out, and then put a policy document behind the planning scheme which explains what compensatory planting is when time has been allowed to provide a proper information sheet for residents to work from.
Chris, would you like to respond, please?
Through the chair. I think whether you have the word equivalent in there or not, it has the same value, so that the acceptable outcome still goes on to say that it's equal in area to the area of vegetation cleared, and then the policy would pick up what type of species and density that comprises. So I think it could go with or without the word equivalent. It probably has the same effect.
I'm speaker against now.
No? Sure. Yeah. Well, that was a question, so speaker against.
Okay. Look, I'm not supporting this amendment. We had councils making a decision by putting this amendment in at the last minute to discard 3 years of workshops and complex decisions taken through many hours of complex advice, and I think it's extremely disappointing that we're doing this on the run in the last few moments of a planning scheme. I don't believe that the amendment today is in the best interests of my residents or the city, nor do I believe this is a minor amendment. A last-minute hastily cobbled together change is an attempt to appeal to minority groups, in my view, and it strips away the right of my residents to have a response through submissions. What went out to the public in October 2015 for public submission allowed for clearing up to 2,500 square metres in the rural zone so people could have some autonomy and management and manage their risk on their own properties. To change this now without giving them an opportunity to object is unacceptable in my view. Their properties are at risk and we're imposing unnecessary green tape and processes and costs on them rather than allowing a sensible outcome with this. And the residents in Division 6 are being ignored in favour of a whining minority, so I won't support it.
Speaker 4, Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Look, I have to acknowledge that Councillor Tolte has been very clear and consistent in championing this. What's important for us to recognise is that the rural zone area has significantly increased in this draft city plan, and the environmental overlay, which is the overriding document that guides how people manage their use of land and vegetation within it, is the overarching measure. I think it's fair to say that the discussion has been trying to find some certainty that we get more on the ground information about how it would impact residents. We have an amendment package which is rolling. We've been discussing the fact that this is an evolving document, and I think the work that Councillor Tolte has done can continue to be ground truth, and we can get more clarity about that going forward. I think it's worth asking, if I may, through you, Madam Mayor, ask two things. One in relation to the vegetation management, which is a different layer of legislation that talks about remnant habitat and significant habitat, significant regrowth, that's another layer of protection. And that the other thing, if I could ask for some clarity about a body of work which is being done, which comes back to what I was mentioning before about corridors. I think it's important that there is a this is put in place so we can get clarity about the areas of corridors that are significant that we need to try to address through this amendment.
You want a response in regards to the Vegetation,
Management Act and also the upcoming body of work about the corridors?
I think that was discussed earlier, but
I don't know that we discussed it here.
Oh, I thought we did, actually, but Vegetation Management Act.
Through the chair, the Vegetation Management Act, which is a state act, it protects certain vegetation. It protects endangered remnant vegetation. Primarily, those areas within redlands are along the waterways, but does protect some areas outside those waterway corridors.
And under the rural zoning, which is significantly increased, that environmental overlay doesn't include the corridors which we believe to be of significance, and there is a body of work that is being done by the city plan team, I was led to believe, that is giving us more on-the-ground information about the vegetation and significance of that vegetation.
I'll get Kim or Chris. Thank you.
That was that other question.
Thank you, through the Chair. Thank you, Councillor Bishop. There is a body of work that's being done, a corridor study. It's actually being run through Environment and Education Unit, funded through City Plan, and our drafting team are involved in that. So we have initial mapping. The first cut of that, we were able to test the veracity of our current pattern of zones and overlays to demonstrate a very strong alignment with what that study is showing. There's further work that's being undertaken which will inform a range of measures, including any potential future environmental acquisition, on-ground work with landholders and further planting in those corridors, and potentially amendments to our city plan to further strengthen those corridors where it's been identified that can take place. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that what's been helpful about this change is that it does give us a little bit more time to get more clarity about that information as it comes in, and that we can have more certainty when we go forward to the state government and give them our on-the-ground mapping and our expectations about not just the corridors, but how we might enhance linkages and so forth in that area. So that's all. Thank you.
Any other speakers against the amendment? Okay, well, if that's the case, Okay, comments on the amendment? We're actually just debating the amendment at this point in time.
I'm happy to see this amendment. I would have liked a little bit more because I think the 2006 planning scheme made our urban area very dense, and there will be continued infill in our urban area. And these large tracts of very significant environmental bushland and everything that we have down in the south, I think they're there today because of the protection that has actually been on them with the various overlays and the conservation zonings and everything that was there. That's why we have still got them. They're very important not only for our wildlife and our fauna, but also for redlands. This is our unique character. And this is what we're known for, is our environmental values. And this also leads into economic development. When you think about ecotourism, when you look at, the walking trails and all this type of thing, I want to ensure that we don't lose that fantastic asset that we've got to work with. Plus, I'm very concerned about the waterway catchment area. And recently, with it having actually been renamed a biodiversity area, I'm interested to know what the South East Queensland Regional Plan, once they give us further details, what exact protection they want in that area. You know, it mightn't allow everything that we'd like to see there. Even it might have to, we might have to up the protection there. But at least with this, it was like Councillor Bishop just said, it'll give us a breathing space to actually work it out with the South East Queensland Regional Plan coming in, the direction we can do down here. And I look forward to working with Councillor Tolte, who has been absolutely strong in defending and standing up for her community in that area. And we'll work to see how we can go forward, ground truthing impacts and working together. So I am glad and I thank the councillors for the last couple of hours and in working this out. I think we've got more to go, but this is a good beginning. And the officers, they probably got a couple more Panadol.
Any other comments? Councillor Gleeson, a comment?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. Yeah, like, I don't agree with this. I think economically it just stifles our rural futures. Just does nothing. I don't understand why we're doing this as policy on the run. I'll be voting against this support as a separate issue to the plan.
Thank you, councillors. Comment, Councillor Golly?
Thanks, Madam Chair. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't it put to us that this would line up with state requirements as well?
Comment on that?
So the Koala, the Southeast Queensland Koala SPRP, or State Planning Regulatory Provision, identifies a threshold of 500 square metres where it doesn't, it effectively doesn't have any regulation where it's below 500 square metres. So there is somewhat of an alignment with that.
So just on that then, basically, when we originally received submissions, this is pretty much along the lines of the submissions of what the residents had asked for. And so we've pretty much...
They were varied.
Yeah, this was the best possible outcome we could come up with, because in the current plan, you can currently clear a lot more than what's actually being put up there now. So this is a great outcome, so we should support this.
All right, councillors, any other comments? Councillor Hughes?
Absolutely echoing Councillor Golay, supporting this 100% for our community. Thank you.
Any other comments? Then I may have one, if that's, I can be indulged. Just my biggest disappointment today, and look, I want to give credit to everyone around the table. I think we have genuinely tried to find middle ground, and hopefully that's acknowledged by the community. My biggest disappointment is that we have had this discussion for a period of 3 years. Last week we discussed this and we had support for it. Last week. And through that change of mind of maybe one councillor or two, you know, we're here back adjourning a meeting that's been on the table in some form or another for a long time. We built our compromise around trust, and when I set out, I made a commitment to each and every one of you that we would find an 80-20. And we did that, and then someone who says that they didn't understand it, despite 3 years of discussion, three times at least, we talked about how we would move forward and informally support this. To have to deal with this on the floor today is disappointing, and it does erode trust as to how we move forward when people say they're going to do one thing and do the opposite. I obviously want to see the city plan go ahead. I do also think that, you know, this is about finding a balance. And in fact, you know, we have given lots of, you know, when you look at the other vegetation management opportunities we have across the city, and they've all been articulated this morning, there has been lots of give in that space as a result of the debate in this room. But as far as our rural futures, which some councillors wear on their shoulder here, you know, the badge on their shoulder about how important that is, this was the one thing they said that would help encourage rural enterprise in our city, and that is one of the growth areas. We don't have a great deal of industry in our city, and I think it's one that is actually quite in touch with our history and our heritage. And so for that reason, I think the economic development opportunities in that space on private land are far greater than what you're going to find from any ecotourism opportunity. Not to say that they don't go hand in hand, and not to say that council doesn't own a lot of land in this city where we can explore those opportunities. And I think there's the opportunities for ecotourism that work hand in hand with supporting a rural enterprise. So for that reason, I'm not supporting the amendment. I do, however, endorse moving forward with the city plan. And I just wanted to use this opportunity to express my disappointment that in the spirit of compromise in 80-20 that we had to have this discussion this morning. But it is what it is. And with that, I'm going to hand back to Councillor Elliott to... Well, we just take a vote on that amendment. Do you want to sum up on that note?
No. Well, I will. Just take your comment in on board. It's not done that it's done in this job. And I think we found a good... There'll be argument for and against, but I think we found a reasonable outcome that people can accept. I think there's good bits and there's probably bad bits in some people's view, but I think we found a good position. As we've said before, we've got a major amendment package that's coming back after this plan's adopted, comes back from the minister. Hey, if you want to run it up the flagpole again, let's have another look at it. But anyway, I'm happy with what we've...
And I think that was noted in our discussions that it would come back for a further discussion through a major amendment process. So now this is a vote, councillors, on the amendment, not the full motion. So those in favour of the amendment, please raise your hands. Okay, so those in favour are Councillor Boglari, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop, those against, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Williams. The motion is carried, so that brings us to the full motion, councillors, which should be... As amended. See up there, councillors, are you comfortable with that? Correct. I don't know that you need any more discussion, but I'm sorry, Councillor Hewlett.
Oh, thank you, Madam. I just wanted to declare a potential conflict of interest. One of the submissions made in the specific lots, and this one was 260, I think, or 220 Colburn Avenue. That person who submitted for that block actually donated to my original political campaign. So I just wanted to, their submission wasn't accepted anyway, but I just want to make that announcement. Thank you.
Councillors, I will ask, unscripted, but I know we have had lots of emails going around this. I think it is a very important point that should be made for the public around this, and this is specifically exempt. So we will note your potential perceived conflict of interest or a conflict of interest. But I would like to, Andrew Ross, just to clear up the record so that there is no misreporting of the facts around this matter, if we could. So in a public realm, seeing it was raised. Andrew, if you could just explain the act in this relation to this, please.
Sure. Through the Chair, the Local Government Regulation 2012 does define conflicts of interest and specifically says a conflict of interest is not defined as an ordinary business matter. An ordinary business matter is to decide on the planning scheme. The commentary under that from the Local Government Association of Queensland says that councillors hold the same amount of interest that other community members hold, that is, property interest. They also say that if you're declared a conflict of interest, we'd never make a decision. So ultimately these decisions can be made in this room and ultimately be subject to the state. So it's not defined as a conflict of interest, but the record is noted all the same.
I just thought in the interest of transparency it was better for me personally to do that. Thank you.
And look, I think there's two elements in decision making in local government that exempt us of those provisions, and that is the making of a town plan and that of bringing forward a budget. And every single person arguably around this room would have a conflict because we all live in the city for a start. So thank you, Councillor Hewlett, that's noted. With that, we can now come... Is there any further discussion? Councillor Elliott, you have moved the original motion and was seconded by Councillor Mitchell. We now have that as amended on the screen. So with that, is there any further discussion required, councillors? Councillor Boglari?
Yeah, I do feel an urge to say something because I've just been... angered, I think could be the word. I've listened and been intimidated, I've been bullied, I've had a lot said over the last few years to do with this city plan. I keep getting told it's to do with an 80-20 rule, and I have said today that there are things in here which I am going to trust give us the outcomes that we want, and I'm going to monitor them, I'm going to look into that, put my energies towards the amendments package, and we have just had a vote on something which was extremely important to some councillors, and we ended up with that vote that we just got on the amendment by the very people that tell me to suck it up and do the 80-20 rule.
Are you talking... Sorry, councillor.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, but I just think that we... Yeah, I keep getting told how...
Councillor?
No, I listen to other councillors in here saying how disappointed they are.
We are about to take a vote on the city plan. We're about to do that right
and
now.
I wasn't going to be able to speak after that, so I wanted to speak beforehand.
Well, councillor, there isn't a process in this, in the standing orders, that allows you to do that unless you're actually speaking to...
I've got my message clear anyway, I think.
Thank you, councillors. So... councillors, is there any further discussion? I've made very clear to you all that as we move forward, that we would, on this particular motion, that we would try to find an 80-20. And I'm asking you to do that now. Absolutely. So, councillors, with the greatest respect, we ask for no surprises, and we've dealt with that today. So, Councillor Elliott, if there's no further discussion,
forgive me, this was a point that I didn't raise before. It was in relation to the low-medium density residential zone, that with a change from 8.5 metre height limit increased to 9.5, and effectively potential for three-storey product, and with a change in the site coverage from 50 to 60 and then 70, that some of the developments in the area...
I think you might be incorrect. I'm getting a shake of a head here from officers. I'm not quite sure. So can we get that explained for you, Councillor Bishop, now that we've...
Yeah, my concern is that some of the things that we were able to flag and the community were able to speak about because it was impact will now be code as a result.
Chris, do you want to respond to that?
Through the chair. You may be reading the grounds of submission that outline that, but they're not changes that are in the draft city plan or the amended version, so it remains 8.5 metres and 50%.
In our councillor? Thank you. Councillor Elliott, would you like to sum up?
Sorry, I didn't mean to talk while Councillor Gleeson was interrupting. Madam Chair, look, I think it's all been said and done. I think any further will be more divisive, and I think we should just put it to the vote.
Discussion, I'll put the motion. Councillors, those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried. There you go, Councillor. Supported by those in favour, please raise your hand. I'm about to do that, Joy. Sorry. Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Williams, those against, Councillor Golay, Councillor Tolte, and Councillor Bishop. So thank you. So councillors, before we close the meeting, firstly, so the motion is carried, just in case you can't count. So just before we close the meeting, this has been an excruciating experience for officers, and they have been nothing but completely professional, giving advice individually and collectively. I think we probably should give them a round of applause for their great work. It's hard enough to navigate the planning landscape, let alone the political landscape, and I think they've done a fine job of that. I'm sure they're looking forward to our next round of major amendments. I don't want to single anyone out because it's been a great team, but you know, we've had people like Chris come from development assessment to join Kim in that team, and really it's a same subject but a different approach. And I think you'd all agree that he's been exemplary in how he's made that transition. And to Kim, Kim, I think you are an incredible asset to this organisation, and the team that you've got underneath you has nothing but respect. And I think I can say on behalf of all councillors, we feel the same way. And this particular achievement today and how we've managed it in the chambers is reflective of that. So thank you. And to Bill and all those other officers, this is not excluding anyone. I know that we're all relieved that we can move on now, but if you could make sure that any officer that's been involved in this process, and has been most of the organisation, could you please, if I can speak on behalf of councils, pass on our gratitude and thanks to them for getting through the last however many years it's taken. With that, councillors, I'd like to close the meeting at 3:01. Thank you. And thank you to you as well.